This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
D'Lo Brown interfered with a frog splash and hit it on Severin, getting some revenge.
I know.
What the hell was it? What was that laugh? It was like an old cartoon fucking Hanna-Barbera dog or something. It was like Snidely? Was that the fucking dog that laughed like that?
JR's got a little more time than I do to sit and actually write a whole show.
This is the third time you said it to me today now. I'm really curious.
Well, I'm not saying that you have nothing to do. I'm just saying
I'm curious how I have more free time than you.
I'm gonna report it.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
I know it's been a rough, and I'm not used to this long, grueling podcast schedule.
Oh, for fuck's sakes. Are you guys just joking off for the next hour?
Come on, did you say D'Amato, late 20s, 30s?
I was being...
And you included yourself in that as well?
I was being nice to him. I am still technically in my 30s.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
What the fuck is a shock wall?
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
You gotta fall through the shock wall.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. PTB Nation, let me know what you're
our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richter.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live. It's Tuesday night, I'm all thrown off, Scott. I don't know what's going on.
You don't sound like Rene Goulet. JR, it's always a pleasure, whether we're a mess or not.
Yeah.
Welcome, PTB. You know what it is? The temperature. Yesterday it was nice and comfy, getting ready for fall, and today it's freaking gross again.
Yeah, I played softball tonight. I'm glad I wore shorts. It was like so muggy out. I'm like, what the hell did this happen? It was cool. I was driving home, and then it got all muggy. So it was
And it's Saturday, it's supposed to be like 63.
Good stop. That's what I like.
Yeah, exactly what I like, too. It's tough to watch football when it's muggy.
Yeah.
Welcome, PTB Nation, to episode 252 of the Place to Be Podcast. And cornucopia week. Well, cornucopia half of the week, in other words. It is headlines. We've got a bevy of things to talk about, of course, coming up this Sunday. From the Joe Louis Arena in Detroit, is Night of Champions, and we'll go over that right now. Very brief card at the moment. I'm sure something will be added on the pre-show. There is a pre-show match as well, so we'll talk about those. We'll go through some news and notes brought to you by WrestleChat.net. Not much. Possible bad news about Ben and Jen's show, Total Divas. Rating was not as dominant as they had been.
Well, there's a few reasons for that. I think one is that... you know, football is back.
Yeah.
Obviously a big blow. That's probably the main blow. That's all my reasons. I think football probably hurt it.
That was probably it.
And the other reason I saw was maybe that there's no more Kardashians are done. And that was like a lead into that. So.
Yeah. And Breaking Bad, too. We'll get into that a little bit. Not much in the way of news. Nothing too crazy. But some nice returns the Monday night on Raw in the go-home episode. And we'll go over TNA, as they actually have a big show this week, JR. The last kind of pseudo pay-per-view night, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
If you will, because this Thursday is No Surrender on Thursday. That's what the Impact show is. And we will find out who will be the official number one contender to face Bully Ray for the TNA World Heavyweight.
No, they're giving away tickets to that thing, right?
Probably. Bound for Glory? Most likely.
No, No Surrender. No, no. Is that in St. Louis?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a story today I saw somewhere about how they were like, if you want free tickets, contact us, basically.
Yeah, it's sad. It's unfortunate. But a good, I haven't minded the story, and we'll get to that when we do talk about TNA. And of course, you will give us our Ring of Honor update. Talked a little bit about, of course, with our man K Squared last week, but you'll give us a nice update on how things are. And then, of course, our week two picks for the NFL season. We both did pretty well. This week, the schedule seems a little more balanced, though, JR. Mm-hmm. I don't see a lot of mismatches this week. Obviously, a lot of week one road teams have their home openers this week, so it'll be interesting. And then we have a special guest at the end, which we'll talk about later. So,
yep.
Why don't we begin with a quick overview of how the big company is doing at the moment, WWE. We are post SummerSlam, and obviously the tone of the shows have changed, JR, because obviously the big switch, Triple H, the big heel dictator boss of WWE at the moment, mm-hmm. with Randy Orton, the WWE champion, as his boy. Your overall thoughts on these last 4 weeks of this beginning of what will probably be a very long-term storyline?
I like it. I guess one of my only qualms is the way they've ended every week until last night with a treating Daniel Bryan and the heels getting over on him, beating him up and leaving him laying. I feel like that happens, and I know it has, pretty much every week. So I feel like every week we've ended on a negative note, and you would think that would build towards Bryan getting the title to end the story here, but I don't think that's what's going to happen. We'll get to that in a little bit, but I like the actual booking behind it. I feel like the Shield got neutered a little bit, but I love seeing them out there with Triple H. Like, I think it's a good role for them, but I feel like it just came out of nowhere, you know? So that part of it, a little bit, is kind of weird. But I think Triple H has been great. Stephanie's been hit or miss. I read in your review that you didn't seem to like that little interaction with Goldust last night, but I actually thought that was one of her better segments she's done on Raw. What happened to Vince? Did something happen to him, or has he just been off?
He's just been off. He's just been off. He hasn't been on. I you know what? That segment was fine. I'm just not liking her in general. Like, she's just, I don't know. Triple H is fine being an asshole on his own. She doesn't need to jump on the asshole bandwagon. Just go away and just let Triple H be the biggest douchebag on the show. I don't think she's necessary. One point on the Shield. I think what will make them better, I agree with you that now they're like paid assassins, which is fine with me. I think they were that the whole time. And I think eventually you're going to hear Triple H say, why the hell do you think these guys are here? You think they just showed up? That would make things – I think people will enjoy that if they add a little – you know, you think they just showed up in flak jackets beating up guys?
Oh, no. Look, there's a ton of continuity in this storyline. I mean, there really is. Now, I read two today. I guess Booker T's been on a lot lately.
Yes, and he goes into locker rooms. Lumpy Rotella and I talked about this today. He walks into locker rooms and pretty much is telling people. He told Daniel Bryan last week, and he told the Big Show last night, to kind of toe the line and don't be dumb. And I'm almost thinking that he's going to become a paid, I don't want to say a lackey. I don't think that's Booker. He's going to become like the SmackDown half of.
So you think he's going to be heel?
I think he is.
Because I was wondering, I think someone on Scott Keith's blog brought this up, wondering if they're going to play off his. Animosity Triple H in the past, like he was here the last time that this all happened, and he's kind of like the warning everyone, almost like, you know, to put it in the Knights of Columbus terms, like John the Baptist or something here before the Savior, warning everyone about how bad Triple H is and the evils of Triple H, and maybe almost like a mini feud of sorts before we find out who the real, you know, Knight is. So I didn't know if maybe they would use him in that role and have him be like a sacrificial lamb for Triple H.
No, I disagree. I think that's a good option. I like my option B, which I think we'll get to when we do our Night of Champion picks. But yeah, he's come on intermittently. He talked to Daniel Bryan last week, and he talked to Big Show last night. I don't like this whole "you're broke, Big Show."
Yeah, that seems very shoehorned in. That seems very shoehorned in.
Yeah, we had Sean dealt with it. So these guys are all dumb. I mean, come on, that's stupid.
Yeah, we don't really.
I don't like that.
It's a stupid storyline.
Yeah.
I mean, they could have just said, there's going to be something, someone else, like some way else they could have done it. Even if they put a title shot, dangle that in front of Big Show. Something other than that. I think this is clearly building towards like Battleground or Survivor Series with some kind of multi-man match, right? With where Cody comes back and Big Show and Dana. But do you think Show's going to turn?
No. No, that's too. I think that's too predictable.
Yeah. Okay.
I used to say a lot, and I said it a few months ago in my review, and I said it on past pay per view reviews on our board, that I always liked Big Show as a heel. But in this instance, I like the sympathy he's getting. I mean, he was a monster heel last year. At this point, of course, you know, like Lex Luger, you could just flip a coin. Mm. You could flip a quarter and decide what you want him to be. I've never seen anybody so easy to switch from one side to the other. But I think this time, you have him turn heel, and there's nobody on the roster that can match him. You already have Ryback. If anything, they may start using him as a babyface fodder. I could see him turning. Because I have some point, because he keeps saying, I'm not a bully. I could see him at one point saying, look, I've been frustrated. I couldn't beat John Cena. I'm just, you know, letting out my frustrations. I'm sorry. And, you know, maybe he starts to pummel Triple H and maybe put some fear into him. Maybe that's why he doesn't fire him, kind of thing. So I think Ryback is the one that'll be used on the heel side if Big Show, on the face side if Big Show turns heel. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think Big Show will stay.
I hope not. I don't see the point.
I'd like to see Ryback maybe become Triple H's muscle. I think that'd be pretty cool. An added guy to the mix. A couple things last night I enjoyed. Goldust coming back was fun.
I thought that was really smart and really good usage of him.
Yep.
I don't know if he's going to stay around or not. It seems like they always intend to bring him back for one night, and he always ends up hanging around for a while. But
he looked good. He looked trim. Yeah. You know, I like how he admitted, you know, I was the black sheep of the family. Cody took the high road, and I was the screw up. And I like how he kind of opened that up, because I read his book, and he was the screw up pretty much. Obviously, Cody is gone for a reason. He's not fired. Obviously, not fired. I don't know what he's doing. I read somewhere he's going to Japan or something. I'm sure he's really getting married, really going on his honeymoon. But I thought he was doing something in Japan for WWE. He's doing something. Hmm. But I'm sure he'll be back in a couple months. Something will happen. I would love to see Goldust stick around. Put him in the same role that you're putting RVD in.
Yeah.
Look, it's okay to have these guys here. You need bodies, and you might as well have bodies that can put on good matches instead of sloths, you know? I enjoyed it. The one thing that annoyed me last night, and it's annoyed me the last few weeks, is it was inevitable that they were going to turn the Bellas face, you know, because they got to be, you know, with their boyfriends. So when I saw them on the face side of that 6-girl tag last night, I wanted to just puke. I'm like, oh, Christ. At least they were good pains in the asses. Now they're going to, like, be sugary and, oh, God, I'm going to puke. But what made it worse was AJ, who's been awesome in this storyline, because she's pretty much right. I did bust my ass. I did become Divas champion. And all you people care about is this stupid fucking show. And I kind of dig it.
Right.
And JBL and Michael and Jerry, they just laughed at her. They almost like no-sold the storyline last night. And that really annoyed me. They pretty much were saying, you're better off being on that show on E than being the Divas champion. Divas champion means nothing. Being on a TV show, now that means something. It just sounded like assholes. I hated it. I hated the whole thing. So, totally devaluing one of the best workers on the roster.
Just a note that just came out, going back to Goldust, of course, right on cue. WWE legend Goldust was heavily praised for his work on last night's Raw, with officials impressed that he brought his A-game and had a great match. They received a standing ovation from the locker room, and many feel that several young talent could learn a lot from Goldust. So I'm guessing we're going to see him hang around.
Good.
For like the 80th time that he's gotten a job, a one-shot, and worked his way into a job, so...
Yeah, good. I think he'll eventually be an agent. I think Dustin will eventually be an agent. He's got his dad's thinking. So does Cody, for that matter. He's got his dad's thinking. There's no doubt about that. I think he grasps the entertainment aspect of it a little more than Cody does. Cody, I think, really gets the ring portion of it down. But the natural there, your boy, he definitely knows the dusty side, baby, of the business. So yeah. I think it'll be great to see him in an agent's role. I look forward to that. But getting back to this Diva thing. Maybe I'm making too much of it, and maybe it's just...
No, I don't think you are. I think they're in a tough spot with it, because I get why they want to focus so much on the show, on the Bellas. I mean, it really is doing very well for them right now. So it's not a surprise, you know? It's... I don't know. It's just a tough spot. It really is. I don't see any way around it for them.
It is.
You can't really book them as heels, even though they're kind of heels on the show. But you can't fully book them as heels because, like you said, they're with Brian and Cena.
But yeah, yeah, you want AJ to be the face because she's kind of saying what everyone feels, but you can't have the face be the person that's trashing the show that you're pushing. So it's a weird conundrum of like kind of smart fans versus, you know, just general fans.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Exactly. But I'm fine with the storyline, but the guys are actually treating it like shit. Like, what other stuff you have tattooed on your neck? Sound like fucking jerk offs. Even JBL. Come on, JBL. Mm. You're supposed to be the heel here. You're supposed to be the one that appreciates the work rate and not the eye candy. Come on. Put some effort into it. Really bothered me. And attention to detail, Mr. Zimmerman. Attention to detail. I did notice before anybody else did that Lawler was wearing a company polo shirt instead of those butt ugly Hot Topic things that he wears every week. I did notice that. I also noticed that Tony Chimmel opened the show ring announcing. He announced Edge, and then Justin Roberts came back. Did you notice that, JR? That Chimmel introduced Edge?
I don't know if he did or
not, but yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah, Chimmel introduced Edge for the Cutting Edge at the open, and then Justin did the rest of the show.
Odd.
Edge looks great. It was really great to see him. He was, you know him, you know, he was one of my favorites.
I liked the thing with Christian. I thought that was well done.
Yes.
It's a cool little touch.
Always one of my number. He was always my number two behind Triple H in terms of active guys.
So he's on SmackDown, right, as well?
He will be on this Friday. Yep. Yeah. Yep, he will. So, because I think they're in, Ottawa. So, right now, here's the main thing, and I've been saying this on our show here, and I've been writing it on my recaps on placetobenation.com. Even though the Bryan Triple H storyline is the main one, that one is still growing. The one that's fully engulfed now and is awesome to watch is Punk and Heyman. That's yes. The main one, because you're talking psychology-driven guys who just know what the fuck's going on.
They're so
on.
Consistent, you almost forget about it.
Yeah.
It's just there, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know about you, but I've really enjoyed Curtis Axel kind of settling into this role of being like the faceless guy, and Paul's fucking his shit up now, and he's pretty much being used and abused as like the one body that Paul has left,
right?
Because obviously, unless they work something out, we're running out of Brock appearances.
Well, they're gonna have to bring someone. There's gonna have to be someone else to go with Paul, right? At some point. I mean, the Axel thing's gonna be done soon, so I'm guessing they're gonna have someone else come in, and I think they're gonna build to Punk and Paul at. Oh, you think they'll make it to Survivor Series?
Could you see? I could see this. I could see a team.
Well, I think
of...
Sunday. Well, I think Sunday. I'm guessing that Punk beats Axel, mm-hmm. and gets the shit out of him after he gets eliminated and Paul pins him. Paul's going to pin Punk to end that match. There's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And somebody's going to come out. My pick, I know I just talked to him. I know I just talked about him a moment ago in something else, but I could easily see it being Ryback. Now, what I'd like to see eventually for Survivor Series is a Heyman team of old school heels. Like, I think RVD could turn heel, join Paul, protect the ECW legacy, and get.
See, I thought the RVD thing too, but I don't. I feel like he's so over, and he fits right into that nice little kind of like the similar role to Christian. This kind of veteran face.
You're right. That's the only problem,
so it's
though.
It's hard to turn him heel. Like, I feel like it's not really going to get over. Like, it makes all the sense in the world, but I don't think it's going to get over.
Yeah, you're right. I'm just he was the best example, but yeah, it probably won't. I don't know what they're going to do for Survivor Series.
Back well, I think we're going to see Punk and Paul one-on-one at Survivor Series.
Oh, so you don't think they'll have a team thing? They'll just be one-on-one, and and that'll be it, and Punk will finally get his up-ins. Now... It was October when I chose, 2 years ago, I didn't do it last year, but it was 2 years ago at the Rumble when I, in October of 11, when I successfully picked Sheamus to win the Rumble out of pretty much nowhere. Do you have Daniel Bryan win the Rumble, or is that too easy and you could give him another scenario and have Punk or have someone else win the Rumble for the other belt?
I don't know where they're
going. Or do you just have Bryan win the Rumble and make it easy?
I mean, that makes the most sense, that he loses Sunday, he gets dicked in Triple H. No more title shots for you, but I don't know. Do you think that there's more of an end game of him and Triple H in this than him winning the title? Do you think that him beating Triple H at Mania would mean more than him beating Orton for the title back at this point?
Maybe. Depends how long this goes. I mean, do you have Orton kind of... splinter off? I don't know, though. I think everybody wants to see at the Superdome him hold the belt up. I almost think this, I'm telling you, this is exactly the cookie cutter to Breakdown 98 to WrestleMania 15. Brian is Steve.
So you think maybe we get Brian Triple? You think we get Brian Triple H in February
at the Chamber? Yep, for the title shot. Hmm. You could. I could see a cookie cutter ring exactly. Triple H puts himself in the Rumble.
Wins the Rumble.
Pulls the whole thing. I know that'll piss everybody off, but just people got pissed off in '99, and then the next night, Triple H, you know, Brian says, "Why don't you put your money where your mouth is, old man? Why don't you and I in a match at the Elimination Chamber. If you win, I'm gone. I'll walk away, go back to my armories and my tent, my Warwick Musical Theater. But if I win, I take your title shot and I go on to WrestleMania."
So you're under the impression then that we're going to do, because now the rumor is Brock and Taker. So if you're saying we're going to get D. Brian Orton, where's that leave Cena?
Maybe. If Steve ends up coming back, and if they still decide to do Steve and Punk, I may be nuts. Hear me out here. Maybe this could be a poll on PlaceToBeNation.com. If they end up doing Punk and Steve, and Brock Taker and Punk, somebody, you think maybe they can afford to give Cena WrestleMania off?
No. No way. No way he misses Mania. You're out of your mind. I mean, unless he's
but
so hurt.
Taker, what do you do with him? Another title match? Nobody wants to see
him. You put him anywhere. I mean, I he's more valuable on the card somewhere than not at all.
Nobody wants to see Punk Cena. I don't know, Cena RVD. What do you think of that?
No.
RVD holds like a quickie world heavyweight title.
No, I'd rather see them build up like friggin' Roman Reigns or Bray Wyatt or something to that. You know, at that point, and get in, let Cena face him. If you're putting Cena down the card, which I'm not convinced is going to happen, I still think we're going to get Taker Cena, and I think we're going to get Brock Punk too.
Are either of those for the? Well,
no, neither for the.
Either of those have belts involved.
No. I mean, if you think about that card, if they did that card, Cena Taker, Austin Punk, I mean, Punk Brock. Well, I guess that knocks Austin out.
Yeah, there's really nothing for him to do. Rock's not coming back. Rock's done.
Unless they do something with Austin with Triple H, like they had said. Or he's Vince's guy.
I don't like Vince as a face, though. I know we do in our vintage vaults. We love him in 2000, but at this point, I don't know. He's too irritating right now to be a baby.
It's a Fred
Every
Willard here.
It's too irritating to be a baby.
I don't know. Well, we got time to hack through that.
We're shooting a fire. Anyway, right now, the company is not doing bad. However, I do have one story that I want to read, JR, before we get to the news, because this kind of has to do with the roster. This is an exclusive on WrestleChat. It's been quite obvious that Dolph Ziggler's big push from earlier in the year has come to a screeching halt, and now we know why. Figure Four Online, our pal Brian Alvarez, is reporting that Dolph Ziggler is being punished for something he said in an interview during SummerSlam week. Figure Four Online doesn't mention exactly what interview was, but just that he's paying the price for saying the wrong thing. They reached out to a source, blah, 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 the idea exactly. After all, Ziggler made several seemingly controversial comments recently, so we wanted to find out the exact one. The source wouldn't say. He pointed to an interview done at that 2K14 panel. On August 22nd, at a WWE 2K14 SummerSlam event, Ziggler did an interview with Arda Ocal of the Baltimore Sun. In an interview, Ziggler expressed his frustration with only having a mixed tag match at SummerSlam, as well as frustration over his character's stagnation since losing the World Heavyweight title. Furthermore, when told by Ocal that he had wished that the style of promos that Ziggler did in Zack Ryder's Z Long Island Story were also used on TV, Ziggler replied, "You and me both." And then Ziggler also made some comments to Mike Jones from DC 101 in Washington about WWE backing Orton. This is what he had to say. Quote, "If you've been familiar with WWE for the last 10 years or so, you would understand without Triple H coming up front and coming out and saying this is our handpicked guy, he's the face no matter what we're behind him," Ziggler said. "If you've been watching for the last 10 years or so, you already know that they made up their mind about him a long time ago. No matter what he does, good or bad, they're behind him and they'll go out of their way to cut people's legs from underneath them to make sure Randy comes out looking great. So the fact that it's now on the open and I'm allowed to comment on it, it actually makes me sick. I'm really happy for Randy. He's awesome. He's so good at this. It makes me mad how good he is. But the opportunities that he gets over and over again makes that chip on my shoulder feel that much bigger to me. I want to go out there and prove that they're wrong. proved to Triple H that he backed the wrong guy for the last 10 years, and no matter what, I'm going to come out on top one way or the other.
I don't know. I still feel like that's a work. I felt that way at SummerSlam, and I feel like they're going to work it into where he's getting punished by Triple H, and then he becomes part of that coalition to take him down. I don't get what their beef would be with him. I mean, he's homegrown. He does whatever. He's got a good look. I don't see why they'd be burying him. I mean, unless he really is speaking out of turn, but the shit he's saying, oh, Triple H is backing Orton for the run. I don't know. Why would a guy come out and say that? Mm. That's immediate fucking burial. Why would you do that? That's career suicide, and he knows
it. If I was the bookers right now, I would just keep the belt on Del Rio, eventually have Triple H, I mean, because he fits right in that corporate mold. Just have him keep it till Mania, have Dolph win something, and a Dolph Del Rio rematch in the Superdome, and Dolph finally win the title back. Pretty simple in that for that side of the storyline, or for that side of the card.
Yeah, I think Dolph is definitely. I think he's going to be part of this group. I think it's him, Cody, Big Show, Brian. I think those are the four they're looking at to battle Triple H's team, maybe a battleground or whatever. But I just don't. I don't know. That seems too contrived and too within the storyline right now to be a shoot to me.
Do you think these real life reporters are were suckered? I don't know about Alvarez or Figure Four Online. They're usually pretty reliable. I don't know if they're just feeding the fire, but maybe they are. But overall, the show's been good. SmackDown's been pretty consistent.
I think Dirty's been really good. I think they've really been on fire since Money in the Bank. I like the storyline. I think it's fresh from what we've seen. I know that sounds stupid to call anything with, you know, Triple H and Randy Orton fresh, but it is. And we haven't really seen them align. We haven't really had this dominant heel faction like this. It really is bringing back memories of 98, 99, 2000. And it's proof that you don't need the raunch and the rated X stuff to really get an angle like this over and be compelling. And it's been good. And a lot of it goes to Daniel Bryan, too, because he's really the first believable, complete face. You know, Punk too, but Punk always had that air of arrogance to where, like, you had to be kind of snarky to like him. Daniel Bryan really kind of relates to everyone, you know?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You don't need to be a jaded prick to be behind him. He's just a gutty guy that works his ass off and does what's right. So it's they found their first real relatable guy that everyone loves. There's really no reason not to like him.
Right.
And that works so well, and it organically built, you know, just like Steve Austin did in 97. It organically built over the last year. If you want to look at last year as their 97 version where, you know, the crowd slowly turned them, built them up, they got them over, and then they ran with them, and they're running with them. So even if he loses Sunday, which I think he's going to, because I think they'd be cutting the storyline off too quick if he didn't, I don't think that means anything bad for him.
Well, obviously with Hell in a Cell coming up in October, the next pay-per-view, you know that match will end in some type of shenanigan. To give him,
I don't
Brian
think he gets another.
Shot.
I don't know. I don't think he does. I don't think you can have him lose again. Well, I guess he really hasn't lost to Orton yet. I don't know. I feel like you can't have him lose twice like that, even if it's screwy. Now, if you want to say he wins by DQ Sunday or something like that, but I don't think he can take two losses.
How about this? How about Orton? The Orton-Bryan match ends in some kind of a schmoz. Then at Hell in a Cell, Bryan, you know, like the board of directors gives Bryan another title match, but Triple H goes to Big Show and says, look, I'm going to put you in this match. You've earned it. You've done the right thing. Of course, he hasn't. They're fucking with him. I'm going to make it a triple threat match at Hell in a Cell. Randy Orton versus Big Show versus Daniel Bryan. But Big Show, you know what to do. Almost kind of like Breakdown, Taker and Kane and Steve, almost the same thing.
I don't know. Big Show
is a wild card in this whole thing. He can't just go away. Obviously.
He is. That's why I hope he doesn't turn. But I don't think. I think this is it for Bryan until Mania, as far as singles title matches go. If they're going to go that way, I think they go in a different direction for a bit.
I could see that.
And they Triple H starts putting Bryan through the gauntlet, through the Shield, through the Wyatts, whoever, you know, whatever.
Mm. Okay. I'm glad no one is really that upset about the Shield, though. I thought people were going to be like, oh, here we go. Now they've lost their individuality, and now they're just puppets. And no, they're not puppets. They're doing what they're supposed to do. They're hired assassins. And eventually, Triple H, I think, is just going to say, what do you think they've been doing the last year? You think they've been working on their own?
I like that part of it. I like the continuity of that he's the one that's been behind them.
Yeah, you know, okay. And I needed to make it realistic, so I had that one night where they kind of surrounded me, but remember, they didn't touch me.
Right.
Yeah. You know? So.
Well, they're in a good, you know, they're in a good spot. I think as long as they don't butcher this, and I know everyone's kind of walking on eggshells waiting for them to do it, but hopefully they keep it strong. And again, I'm fine with Bryan losing. As long as it's not a clean loss, and I don't think it will be. I'm fine with him not winning the title just yet. I think the story's got a lot more in it to be told. So I think the pay-per-view will be interesting. We're coming off a very good SummerSlam. You know, outside of Bryan and Orton, though, the only thing that worries me about this card is I don't really see that match carrying or show carrying match work rate kind of gem on this show. That's why I think they still have to add something.
Yeah, I don't see that you know, perfect match like we saw for SummerSlam, kind of you know, like we had at you know, with Punk and Brock. Like, we don't have an anchor match. And then the Cena-Bryan match was the shocker. But, yeah, I'm not sure what to expect in that aspect. This might be one of those off-pay-per-views. This might be very storyline-driven.
Yeah. I mean, I think Bryan Orton will be very good. And I think we're going to get some time. But I think we need one match on the end of card they're throwing in, whether it's Ambrose or someone to help carry the show a little bit. So, all right, why don't you talk a little bit about TNA, how things have been going. We're hurtling towards Bound for Glory. Of course, a lot of up and down in the news with the checks bouncing or checks being late and shows being canceled and guys being cut. And they keep plugging along, though. What's your thoughts lately on the show?
Excuse me. I've been roster-wise, they're loaded. I mean, they're really loaded. Besides now Triple H, has there really been a better, solid, bona fide heel in the company, in wrestling, than Bully Ray? He's been fantastic. You want to just punch him in the face. It's not X-Pac heat. I mean, he really is rolling with this. They found a great way to kind of circumvent Brooke Hogan leaving the company now. Miss Tessmacher, because her name's Brooke, too, is his old lady, if you will. But now, over the last couple weeks, we've noticed the kind of the splintering of aces and eights. Anderson's getting annoyed now. Bully Ray's kind of cutting corners and kind of doing his own thing, and he's not following, you know, club rules kind of thing. And he's actually, Hogan 2 weeks ago said at No Surrender that Bully Ray had to face an aces and eights member, and it's going to be Anderson, who snapped and got pissed off at Bully Ray last week after Bully Ray lost to Sting. But that is a great roster. Bobby Roode, Austin Aries. I'll even throw Jeff Hardy in there, even though he's not one of my favorites, but he's held his own.
So what is it then, Scott? What's the missing piece to all this? Tell me. Because you've been watching now for amazingly 9 months every week, reviewing every week.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't they gaining? Why is the critic still harsh on them? They have the roster. They seem to have some sort of semblance of storylines. Like, what is it that's not capturing people's imagination?
It still feels very minor league. A lot of it, in my opinion,
even though they're out on the road. I mean, well, they're not trapped in the impact zone anymore. They're building. They got rid of the pay-per-views. It feels like they're doing everything wanted them to.
Well, they canceled one thing. They robbed. I know you hate this term, but they kind of robbed Peter to pay Paul. They got rid of the pay-per-views because they were losing money on them, but now they're losing money because they went out on the road. The problem, in my opinion, a lot of it's TV issues. Number one, the announcing. I mean, I love Taz. I love Taz as a wrestler. I liked him. You and I loved him on SmackDown for a good chunk of the 2000s. He's checked out. Mike Tenay is, he's not bad. He's not great. He's average. He's like Michael Cole, 1999. He's average.
So you're telling me Mike Tenay's the reason why?
No, but I'm just saying it's a chunk of the. It's one of the many reasons, television wise, what the problem is. Number one, number two, they don't let anything linger. Like, they don't let the effect of something, whether it's a big upset or a heel attacking a face. It's like, Mickie James just attacked ODB. Oh my God. All right, now let's go backstage. Like, they don't let anything marinate on your eyes. Like, oh my God, I can't believe she just turned heel. This is crazy. Let's look at a replay. Oh my God, I can't believe this. Then go backstage. Instead, it's Mickie James just kicked ODB in the knee. Oh my God. All right, let's go backstage and talk to Austin Aries. Like, everything's just so fast. Bada bing, bada bing, bada bing, bada bing. Everything seemed, they make it look edited, look taped. So it looks cheesy. It doesn't feel natural. Camera shots. They're in small places. They know, we know that. They're in places that seat 6,000, 8,000. And sadly, the camera angles don't make it look like they're in a place that seats 8,000. They're not like WWE who remember in the mid 2000s, the WWE was in places only seated 7,000, whether it was Raw, even pay-per-views. But they know how to hide that. TNA doesn't hide that. They look like they're in a warehouse still. So they're promoting themselves as cheesy. And that's the problem. It's not the roster, although they're wasting a lot of money on things like Hogan. He doesn't have to be the GM. That's a waste. That doesn't do anything for anybody anymore. He doesn't get the pops he did.
It's clear TNA, it's not moving the needle either. I mean,
exactly. And TNA fans, I mean, obviously, you know, TNA fans are fans from way back. So to them, Hogan in general is special. But he doesn't bring that cachet that he did when he came back to WWF in 2002. It's not the same. And sadly, they need a shocker. The roster is, as good as it is, the roster is very... Tito Ortiz? That's your big surprise? Tito fucking Ortiz?
Yeah.
The guy's an idiot. He looks like a deer in headlights. He doesn't know how to act in the ring. His mannerisms, he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. He's clueless. He's absolutely clueless. At least Rampage kind of gets it as part of the main event mafia. He kind of gets it at least. His promos aren't bad. His mannerisms, he knows how to kind of blend in with Sting and Joe and even Magnus, who's a relative newcomer. He gets it. Tito Ortiz looks like an idiot. And Bully Ray is pushing him as the big, you know, the bad boy from Huntington Beach or whatever the fuck he is. And he just, that's your shock. These big vignettes, and it's Tito Ortiz.
I feel like we talk about this every time, but who could they reasonably get?
Unfortunately, JR, I don't know who. I don't know. There's no main eventer in this company, in WWE, that's pissed off enough to want to go there.
I mean, we talked about on the mid-year. Was it you or Graham that was advocating for Orton? I think it was you, right?
It was me.
Yeah. I don't see that happening. Obviously, now for sure. I mean, I think their only hope would be that Orton got popped for a drug violation and had to go there. I mean, that to me, that'd be their only hope.
Yeah.
As far as that goes. I don't know who else either at this point. I mean, unless, like, Punk gets completely disenfranchised and walks, but he just signed a new contract, so I don't see that happening.
He had said in interviews he vowed to never go back to TNA. Yeah. Never.
He doesn't need to. Sadly, JR probably more in the indies.
he probably would. Daniel Bryan too.
Yeah.
I mean, Chris Hero's run with the company is probably done. I mean, they're so disillusioned with him now. They took him off the FCW page. They're not thrilled with him. He could go there, but it's Chris Hero. I mean, when you're going to get more indie fans to TNA, that's not going to do it. Sadly, JR, I don't have an answer. I don't know. I mean, who's left right now to make the only guy that I could see doing something because he's just that much of a douchebag to do it is Brock.
And what would that? Yeah, that was no point. They'll never pay him what Vince is paying him.
No, what would that do?
Yeah, you know? I really don't know. I
don't know either.
The only thing I don't even know what Cena would do at this point if he went there. But
no, they'd fuck him up too.
I don't know. I'm not sure who it is. I don't know what their answer is. If Hulk Hogan didn't save him, and I feel like they had their chance, but they botched that out of the gate.
Yep.
And they really recovered from there. So I don't know. I just feel like they wasted a lot of time. Like, I feel like they had a lot of years where they could have been, and they arguably were the better product for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't take advantage. And at some point,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, the other problem is their main guys. I've learned there was a guy that when I was watching it sparingly, I was never a big AJ Styles fan. I know he's a good wrestler. Didn't like his promos. I felt that he was very regional sounding.
After watching that, you know, after watching now for 9 months, now he didn't start the year with the company. They had this whole, they kind of did the whole storyline similar to Sting in 97.
Right.
You know, they didn't trust him in the company, and yeah. Aces and Eights ran wild. They pretty much copycat Sting with him. And he came back in, you know, May or whatever. Now he's kind of settling back into the phenomenal role, and he says that I'm the face of this company for the last 10 years. I want to be the go-to guy. The problem is he doesn't have that national thing that WWE.
Well, he's been there for 11 years, you know? It's like, yeah. Of course not.
You know? And it's he's just not that strong enough a national guy to do it. I don't know. So the answer is, I don't know. I'm sorry. I wish I had an answer. I wish I was. I wish I had a magic wand or a crystal ball and come up with an answer.
All right. Let me ask you this.
Because it's Place to Be Nation. We're all about solutions, not complaints. And I want to give a solution, but
let me ask you this honestly.
Sure.
A year from today, Scott.
Mm-hmm. I'm
putting you on the spot. 1 year from today, and we're doing episode 350.
Mm-hmm.
Will TNA be in existence?
Yes.
Okay. I agree.
Yeah. They're not going to go under. They'll always find a way. The other problem?
Will they be any closer to WWE than they are today?
No.
Will they be further out?
No. I think they'll be the same as they are now. I think they'll be the same. I think another problem is, and I like her, and she's doing the best she can, but when you're talking about big time wrestling promoters, people that have a lot of money to run a company, Dixie Carter is no Vince McMahon.
Well, I mean,
she knows how to get her face.
Nobody
on TV.
Is. I mean, she knows how to. He grew up in the business. He's a huckster. He's a promoter. I mean. No, of course not. I mean, I don't think anyone ever thinks she'd be Vince McMahon. I don't think that's even possible.
So she can't even. She's not even an eighth of him. The problem is she has the money, and she's trying her hardest. She doesn't have enough wrestling people around her.
Yeah, well, she does. This is the wrong ones. I mean, putting her full trust in guys like Bischoff and Hogan that have already tanked, you know, one promotion before. In a blaze of fire. And before that, she trusted Russo, who did the same thing. So, I mean, she's bringing in guys that killed WCW. And I know Bischoff did a lot for WCW, but that was, I mean, I don't, you know, that was a lucky strike. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You know, look, he showed great vision and did a great job bringing that in, but he never sustained it. Nothing ever went anywhere. So I don't think he's really any kind of savior. I think the one guy that could have done it for them creatively, I don't know, business-wise, how much it would have turned around, would have been Heyman going there. I think if Heyman went there, if they would have ponied up and paid him when they wanted, you know, when they reached out to him before they brought Hogan. Was it before Hogan and Bischoff when they reached out to him? I forget when it was.
Yes.
It was before he came back.
It was early 09. It was late 08, early 09.
Yeah, they came back to him and they tried to bring him in there. If you get Paul and you put him in charge of everything creative, everything, maybe he talks Punk to come in 2010 when his thing's up. Or 11, I mean. Maybe he brings Brock Lesnar with him when he's ready. You know, I think Heyman could have really been a key only due to his connections. He's got Bischoff bringing his guys in, but they're dwindled. You know what I mean? Imagine if Heyman was in TNA and he got Punk when Punk walked out in 2011, if Punk left and went there with him.
Well, it would have been crazy. Crazy. It would have been insane.
I mean, I think that was their shot. I don't know... I don't know who's out there besides him that they could really bring in on the wrestling side. Outside, like, maybe fucking, like, Bill Watts or something. I think Scott said that when he was on the show. to really turn things around, you know what I mean?
This might be far-fetched. I'm really... Forget outside the box. I'm thinking outside the fucking globe.
I think I know where you're going, and I want to, like, say it when you're saying it because
Okay.
I don't want you to think I'm just going to say that I know that you're saying this. And it may not be it. It may not be who I'm thinking
of. In the right moment, when it had just happened, the schism.
One, two, Three. Shane McMahon.
Shane McMahon.
I I agree. I think that would have been interesting. Now, I don't I don't see it happening.
No. Being pissed off at your sister for kicking you out is one thing. Stabbing your father in the back, that's something different.
I can't see it. I don't see any reason why.
No, it's not going to happen now. This was when did he get kicked out? Like 2010?
That was a while ago. Yeah. He just left that other company, so I wonder if he's coming back.
You know, and there were, I think they were at a Yankee game together a couple years ago. Remember there was a
I'll give you this, though. Look, I like Shane as much as the next guy, as an on-screen performer and everything else. What has Shane ever done, though, to prove that he can run a wrestling company, the creative side of it?
Oh, the creative side of it, nothing.
All right, well, but, I mean, even the business side. I mean, what has he really done?
Well,
he did all the new media stuff, but he didn't run the company.
No, but I mean, he never probably needed to.
I'm just saying, well, that's my point, though. He's not proven. So I know you're saying, like, oh, it would be a big deal, and I don't know. I feel like getting Heyman for the creative side would have been way more than getting Shane.
Well, the other problem,
and I like Shane. I just don't see his track record of going in there. And I mean, I could see it maybe where you want to say he would have been a good, you know, take it over for Vince and everything, because, you know, he could have learned to Vince and he could have slowly take, like Triple H is doing. Mm-hmm. But just to go cold into there, I don't know. I don't know if that would have worked. I think he would have tried too hard to make them big quickly, and mm-hmm. I think it would have bombed, honestly.
Well, ultimately, maybe it's not just a creative problem. Maybe there is a money problem there. Maybe Dixie doesn't know what the hell she's doing.
There's a lot of problems. I mean, I think they run deep, and it sucks because they do have a quality program most of the time. It just sucks that it's not getting the eyeballs that it needs. And I just feel like they've had so much time, 11 years, and they haven't mm-hmm. gained anything. Mm-mm. They're no better off than the day they started. I mean, yeah, they got a national TV deal, but big deal. And no one's watching. Then what the fuck does it matter?
I know. I know people I work with who are big MMA fans. You know, obviously they love UFC, but if Bellator had any more kind of, sachet that UFC did, and Bellator was still the lead in.
Cachet, you mean?
No, sachet, both. I said cachet enough times. I like sachet, like sashaying in, kind of. Almost like a kind of like an abstract thinking that they're dancing, sashaying into the scene and making a big splash.
To do worse than Josh Richter.
Josh Richter would have found a great way to use the word sachet, damn it.
I guess so. By the way, those guys, again, still, everything's my fault. Everything goes wrong in their lives. Blamed on me.
It's the whole Svengali speech again.
I invited Josh over for football, right? And he knows very well that I'm going to have the Jets game on. And I'm going to have Red Zone on. You got to monitor all the games. Right. I don't give a fuck about the Patriots. So I asked him, I said, do you want the Patriot game on? Yes. What did I do, Scott? I wrangled another TV, brought it down, brought my cable box down, did all this legwork, and then he's bitching on Richard and the Mailman that it was on the small TV. What do you want from me? I rearranged my whole house situation just so he could watch the stupid Patriots. And can I tell you how much I love Alfonso Soriano, who just hit a go-ahead home run in the eighth, his second of the game? Sorry, that was just a big orgasm throwing up of.
Will it be enough?
No, Mariano's probably going to blow it.
You don't have to get me lecturing to me about Machado. You don't have to get me started.
As even him, Josh stabbed me in the back on this one.
Oh, my God.
I don't like it.
I'm the one. Fuck you, is what he predicted.
But I will say this. It's a great show. If you haven't listened to Richard and the Mailman.
Yeah, it is good.
It's a lot of fun. I mean, even if you're not a Breaking Bad fan, you can go around that. Or if you don't want to be spoiled, go around that. Because they have really good chemistry. And they get on these inane topics that are really funny, including the postal tip of the week at the end of the episode is always good. Mm. But a lot of cool stuff they get into. It's fun stuff. So check it out.
But if they had a better thing on either end to lead it into, no knock on Bellator. They do well. They you know, their focus is smaller, like middleweight, cruiserweight, you know, featherweight kind of guys, not like the Cain Velasquez size guys, Junior Dos Santos, nobody like that. Then maybe the show would have some oomph. But I like the roster. The storylines are not terrible. I think Aces and Nates is getting a little stale, and I have a feeling that at Bound for Glory they'll end, and I think so will the Main Event Mafia. The whole faction thing will be over. We can get back to normal.
It's gonna be over. I mean,
yeah.
How much? I mean,
it's been 18 months. It started in June of 12, but it wasn't apparently until I started watching in January that it really picked up, according to a lot of people. Will they still be here next year? Yeah. Will I still watch it? Yeah, probably.
Will Aces and Eights still be going?
Will Aces and Eights still be going? Yes. Will Sting go back and forth? And I don't know. They, notice right. Their Hall of Fame is only one guy a year. Last year it was Sting. This year it was Kurt at Slammiversary.
All right, let's quickly just talk about Ring of Honor. Okay. The world title tournament's ongoing. This week we had just three matches from the Toronto taping, and we had the awful BJ Whitmer, Michael Bennett match. I thought the match sucked as it was, and then the end was so stupid. This is where Whitmer busted his neck. I mean, Bennett just pile-drove him on the ring apron, like outside the ropes, you know, on the very edge of the apron, and it was just disgusting. And I don't know what the fuck they were thinking. I really don't. It was a shitty match too. It's not like that would have been like this awesome spot that solidified the match as like a legendary match. I mean, the match sucked. And I just don't like Whitmer at all. He's always moving in slow motion. And Bennett's okay, but he needs to be in there with a guy that can work with him. He's not a guy who can carry anyone. Yeah, I don't know. That pissed me off. Other than that, I think the tournament's going pretty well. I think it's still set up for Elgin to win. I don't see any other way around it. He had a good match with Paul London this week. Things are just pretty much status quo. I mean, all the focus is really on the tournament, and then as well as the rapid-fire title changes that they're doing with the tag titles. The Wolves are now the champs. They knocked off Forever Hooligans, who had beaten Fish and O'Reilly, so they've been hot potatoing the tag titles around a little bit. And I do think they need some more names. I do believe that. I feel like the marquee matchups that they have are getting a little played out. I feel like the roster is getting a little stale over there. I like the tournament, though, because that's going to hide a lot of that. But I think at some point they need to find some more names, and I don't know where it is. I mean, I would love to see them reestablish that connection with TNA that they had, you know, 6 or 7 years ago when they were trading guys off. Mm-hmm. I don't see why they don't. I don't see what the problem is. I know they're both on TV, but I think it could only benefit both of them, honestly.
Will someone buy them eventually?
Well, yeah, Sinclair did.
But will Sinclair, do you think Sinclair will eventually feel their investment isn't?
I don't know. They seem to be pretty behind it.
Okay.
So, no, I think they're okay.
Would Kevin Kelly work for Vince McMahon again?
he would tell you no.
I know. No, of course he would. And Kevin's great. Kevin's fantastic.
They could do more Carino.
What's wrong with the roster? I'll tell you something. Speaking of Carino, for those that haven't, who didn't buy it, and JR, you and I have to watch it at some point. Probably not the next time I'm in the chateau. Probably for Turkey weekend. If you haven't watched that Montreal Theory, the Joe Dombrowski DVD that you and I got WrestleMania weekend, the guy that I like the most on that, sorry, Kev, I love you, Kev, you know that. But all right, I'll say this: next to Kevin, the guy that was really had a lot of insight and didn't sound like a guy who had no idea what he was talking about was Carino.
Yeah.
He sounded very intelligent. Remember, he was kind of he even admitted he was a jobber at that time.
Yeah.
In 96, you know, 96, oh, yeah, 97, definitely. 98. So he was there. Obviously, he was, you know, a gum and a shoe. But he was there, and he saw it. He said that the fight happened in front of this whole, he mentions about, I'm not going to get into this whole thing, but just an example. He talked about the whole thing in Hartford when Brett and Sean had the fist fight. And he said he was there. He said it was a lot of hugging and throwing for 5 seconds. Do I believe him? Yeah, what else would, I mean, why would he lie? I mean, you know, but he was definitely knows what he's talking about. So having said that, JR, obviously Carino doesn't wrestle anymore. Do you think eventually Carino will take over backstage?
Oh, there? He may. I mean,
remember yeah. he tried to buy AWA. Excuse me. He tried to buy AWA. What was that, like 7, 8 years ago?
Yeah.
The AWA.
He's a guy I think that could really be, I don't know if he would come because he doesn't seem like a guy that wants to play the games, but I think he could really be useful to WWE, both on commentary and as a backstage mind or as a manager. I mean, you want another guy in the vein of Paul, he would be great. I mean, he was really good with Scum and he was great in commentary. Mm-hmm. I think he's kind of an untapped talent. I don't know if he'll ever come in if he wants to schedule or, like I said, to deal with the nonsense, whereas right now he pretty much does what he wants. But I think it would be a pretty cool hire to bring him in. I doubt it'll ever happen, but all right, Scott, let's quickly do our Night of Champions predictions here.
Okay.
To the news.
We've got, I guess, six,
basically,
well,
yeah.
five really official five, matches, yeah. Five official matches, one guest match.
Yep.
On the YouTube, Yahoo, Google, whatever pre-show and on TV, Tag Team Turmoil, number one contenders, Primetime Players, The Usos, The Real Americans, Tons of Funk, and 3MB. The winner will be the number one contender for the tag straps. I think it's a Primetime Players.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be the Usos again, unless they're going to win the titles. I mean, that's the only reason they would. I don't think they'd have them come on and then lose again. That makes no sense to me.
No.
I don't see Tons of Funk or I mean, Real Americans. God, Cesaro just lost to Santino, so I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I what the fuck happened there?
Yeah, Primetime Players are due, I think.
You know, they have this renewed babyface push.
Yeah.
That's happened recently.
For some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know why either. You know, I think they're in line. Now, there is rumors that there's going to be a tag team championship match and that the winner of the Turmoil
will
face... They said
that. I didn't think that was a rumor. I thought they said that last night.
Did they say it? I mean, I was... You know, when you get to the third... For me, after we record, when you get to the third hour, sometimes some commentary sometimes slips through.
Well, no, I didn't hear the commentary either, obviously, but I could have swore that it was on the screen that said they got a title shot that night or something.
Oh, okay, maybe they did. All right, so if it is a prime, we both like the... Do they beat the Shield? Do they beat Rollins and Reigns?
No.
No, I don't think so either.
I don't think any of these teams... Well... The only ones I would say maybe would be the Usos. I don't see them losing again. So if the Usos win on the pre-show, I'd say there's a chance they'd knock the Shield off. But I don't see the Shield losing the titles now that they're involved with the Orton Triple H stuff. I don't see that.
Right.
I think you keep them and maybe something like Cody and Dolph win them when they're trying to, you know, strike back or something like that.
Right. We don't have a U.S. title match. I have a feeling they added it. I think they'll add it late. Do you think? And if it is, regardless who he faces, I think Ambrose keeps it.
I agree. And yeah, I think they'll add one. I mean, they need another match to flesh this card out, and Night of Champions would only make sense for them to have a U.S. title match. I'm not sure who he faces, but like Kofi or something like that.
All right. The Divas Championship, it's a fatal four-way. AJ defends the title against Natalya, Naomi, and Brie Bella. I'll let you go first.
I'm going to say AJ retains.
God, I hope so. Fucking shoot me in the face.
Unless they're filming something, though, they're coming back in November with new episodes, so wouldn't surprise... But I could see a storyline within the match where, like, Brie screws Naomi or Naomi screws Natalya. It's something... There's something there to do with Total Divas that's going to lead to maybe the three of them are all fighting and AJ sneaks out the win. So I'm going to take AJ and assume that there's some kind of Total Divas storyline mixed in.
I hope so. The only other person that I would not mind seeing win would be Natalya because she's an actual wrestler. If by some grace of Jesus, well, I know she won it. I know one of them won it the first time, but that was different. They actually weren't terrible in the ring the first time they were here, so it didn't bug me as much. This is just a shit show. But I think AJ retains as much as they've pretty much no-sold the storyline, which really aggravated me. But I agree. I think she keeps it. On a side note, does that irritate you that they're – I know it doesn't because I know sometimes you think a little differently than me in this kind of thing. But does involving the show in the match bug you?
No, whatever.
No, I didn't think so.
I mean, the show's doing well. It's hard for me to begrudge anything going on with that show right now.
Right.
Because it's doing well. I mean, it's if they were struggling, if the show sucked and they were trying to keep it on life support, you know, then I could see it. But it worked. So it's hard to say. It's hard to fault them for running with it.
Okay. So we both like AJ. Thank God. All right.
And that's just our obligatory right there. Divas watching Divas. Total Divas watching Total Divas. Ben Morris and Jen Engel do the weekly recap, PlaceToBeNation.com. It's a must read. Even if you don't watch the show, it's a very very good recap. They look at it. It's funny because they look at it tongue-in-cheek, but also Ben takes it all very seriously. So, and Jen, I like her perspective, but she knows nothing about wrestling, so this is just like a general reality show to her.
Yeah.
So she's learning a lot, so it's almost naive, her view of it, and then Ben kind of brings the knowledge on that end. But
yeah,
it's a good pairing. It's a unique voices that we have there. So check that out. Total Divas watching Total Divas, usually posted every Wednesday, PlaceToBeNation.com.
Yes, absolutely. All right, the one non-title match. Second time in 3 years that Punk has been involved in a non-title match at Night of Champions. You and I watched the last one together 2 years ago. CM Punk takes on the World Wrestling Entertainment. It's almost the World Wrestling Federation. I'm in that vintage vault mode. The WWE Intercontinental Champion, Curtis Axel and Paul Heyman. If Punk beats Axel first, he gets Heyman.
Okay, so it's not just a straight handicap match? I thought they were...
No, it's a handicap elimination.
Right, but so that means he has to win...
But Punk has to pin Axel first.
Okay.
Yeah, if he pins... He has to pin Axel first, and if he pins Axel, the match doesn't end. He gets Paul, too. But he has to pin Axel first, apparently. Okay. That seems the way they describe it. I agree with you, what you mentioned earlier. I think he beats Axel, and then somehow Paul pins him.
Yeah, I think this definitely ends with Paul pinning Punk. I don't think they're ready to blow it off yet. No, I think there's
somebody
still
added
some
to the
juice
mix?
Left in the tank. Yeah, well, maybe Axel gets knocked out, and then the new guy comes in and wipes Punk out. I could see that completely.
Who's the new guy?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I like Ryback. Something about him in that role with Heyman I like. I don't know. Something about that I like. I put my money on Ryback. For the World Heavyweight Championship, Alberto Del Rio defends against Rob Van Dam. It's pretty evident that Del Rio is going to win, but this might be your sleeper of the night.
By the way, I don't think you have that right with the Heyman thing. I think it's just a straight. I think that's how it'll go, but I don't think that's a stipulation. I think it's just a handicap match.
Okay, because
it's elimination, but it's not. Yeah, I think Heyman can get involved at any time.
No, I think Heyman can get involved. All right, so I guess Punk is... I guess Punk
just has to beat
he
both
wants
of
to
them.
Just, yeah, I think Punk's whole point is he wants to get Axel out of the way.
Yeah.
So he has Heyman all to himself.
Yeah,
all right, so maybe it's
he could fight Heyman before Axel's out.
Yeah.
I don't think they will, but they can.
It'll be like Bobby and Arn at the 89 Survivor Series.
Yeah, they'll do something. Yeah, no, Axel will get eliminated. Punk will be just about to get Heyman, and then I think either Axel comes back or someone else interferes. And Heyman pins Punk. It just makes sense. And then maybe next month we get Punk versus this new guy, and then eventually Punk versus Heyman.
And if he pins Heyman and beats the shit out of him, is Heyman gone?
Well, maybe for a couple months, but
okay.
I think they realize how valuable he is. That I don't think he'll be gone ever again. I mean, unless he goes crazy.
Well, yeah. All right, World Heavyweight Championship. Your champion Alberto Del Rio takes on Rob Van Dam. I think we probably both think Del Rio is going to win here. But yep. I think this is your sleeper of the night.
Well, I don't think it's that hard to get a sleeper on this card, but...
yeah, it's true.
Do you think Ricardo turns?
No.
Really?
Pays him off? Maybe. Maybe it was all set up. That would be kind of interesting.
I think he definitely turns on him.
Yeah, because I think...
I don't see any point keeping him. I think the whole thing's just been a ruse.
I think it was dumb anyway.
Excuse
so,
me. Yeah. It makes no sense to have him.
He really
did
beat the shit out of him, though.
It's too really, well. He'll just say I learned my lesson or something.
Yeah, something like that.
I think it's way too obvious. I don't know. I just way too odd of appearing. And what's he going to do? He's not going to stay with RVD. What's he going to do after? It's like Sherry and Tatanka, 93.
Mm. Yeah,
odd pairing.
Does Sandow cash in?
No.
Okay, I don't think so. He does either. For the WWE Championship, the chosen one, Randy Orton. Taking on Daniel Bryan. Orton wins, Booker T turns.
Yes, I think Orton wins as well. I don't want Big Show to turn, but I could see your angle happening. I could see Show coming out, not doing it, and the Booker comes out like he's going to stop Show, and then he ends up doing something. But I don't know, I still get this feeling that Booker is going to be on the other side of this. I feel like he's not going to be a Triple H. But I'll take Orton here through some kind of shenanigans.
Okay. I just don't like the way this card was booked. It seems very slap happy. I feel it's just slapped together. Not, it doesn't have that real shine that SummerSlam did, you know, or even Money in the Bank for that matter. Something's missing, but these are the kind of shows sometimes that sneak up on you. You never know. And then two pay-per-views in October.
Oof. Yeah, I thought we were done with that, but.
Nope, we're going to have...
Well, we got the Cell, and then it's weird to have Battleground and Survivor Series back-to-back.
Well, it's like when they used to do when they had bragging rights before. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like something's going to happen with two big teams at bragging rights. I mean, at Battleground. I don't know what they're going to lead to at Survivor Series, but I think that's what we see at Battleground. Mm. All right, let's hit a couple news bits here.
Okay. All right. After Raw went off the air last night, CM Punk beat Axel in a dark match main event, and then Punk hit Axel with a chair and celebrated, and that was pretty much it. So just a little taste there of something you might have missed. We talked about the Breaking Bad situation. After week-over-week growth in every single episode of Total Divas, it looks like the surprising show has finally met its ratings match. This past Sunday of Total Divas scored only 1.091 million viewers during its initial airing. That is way down from the usual, which is about 1.3, and the week before it was 1.52. Giants-Cowboys hurt that, and Breaking Bad hurt that.
Yeah, and I do think there's some viewers. I do think there's some legitimacy to the Kardashians thing too, not having that running up to that. But I do think it's mainly football, to be honest with you. Because Breaking Bad, they're in their fifth episode, sixth episode. So, I mean, they haven't done a damage yet. And isn't Breaking Bad at 9? And Total Divas is at 10.
Yeah.
So I call bullshit on that one, Scott.
What, Breaking Bad? No, they have 5 million viewers.
Well, it's on, yeah, but it's on an hour before, and this is the sixth week it's been on, so I don't... Yeah. Now, all of a sudden, it causes an issue?
Yeah,
no,
I know.
I think it's completely football. Yeah. That was a compelling game with two teams and big markets, and week one, so I think it was completely NFL.
Former WWE diva Beth Phoenix was backstage at last night's Raw from Toronto. Did you know she's going out with Edge?
Yes, actually, I think I didn't know that.
I didn't till Lumpy Rotella.
I can't keep track of the Edge Punk marriage.
Yeah, Edge Punk.
they pass chicks back and forth.
Yeah, ripping through the divas.
I think Punk's still with Lita.
Yeah. Yes, as far as I know, still is. There was one more that I... oh, by the way, there was a Total Divas marathon that was on. That was yesterday. They did a 6-hour block of all six episodes. And there was one more that I wanted to see, and I just missed it. It's on the other page. Otherwise, the news has been very, very light. Usually there's a lot of heavy post SummerSlam news. Here it was. A physical WWE Hall of Fame building continues to be rumored for Orlando, Florida. The Best of Orlando website published an article noting that the NBA city venue located at City Walk is expected to shut down to make way for the WWE Hall of Fame and a possible wrestling-themed restaurant. Oh, boy. Don't get the same chef that was at WWF New York when they opened. Construction walls are already up for some of these projects now, so it's a matter of time before we know what's really changing and what's staying the same. Stay tuned for more details when the City Walk changes will be complete. I still wish it was closer, but I know. Logistically and fiscally, it makes...
it'll be a tourist attraction.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
All right. Lanny Poffo, your pal. The brother to the late Macho Man Randy Savage.
Stickers and lemonade for sure.
Exactly. And brother of Jason. Recently spoke to PW Torch about his brother, not Jason, being inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame.
To the Mausoleum Video Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
That could have been a whole angle right there.
Maybe. Maybe not. Quote, I gave them permission to do it without my permission. Just don't invite me and don't pay me. I don't need their 30 pieces of silver to defy my brother's wishes. Kayfabe commentaries have my best interview regarding the reasons Randy had for this position. Poffo noted that his brother's wishes were for Randy Lanny and his father Angelo all to be inducted as a family into the WWE Hall of Fame. I still don't believe that.
I mean, I believe it in the sense that he probably said it one night, but I think Lanny's taking it very literally to the point where, nope, he cannot go in unless the whole
family
goes
in. You've
been a genius. Yeah, I mean, maybe Randy have a couple of beers one night, and Randy's like, yo, you know, Lanny, if we don't all go in, I ain't going in. Yeah, you dig it. You know, something like that.
I mean, Liz, give me a beer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be tag partners with Scott Hall. I'll be right back. I can see something like that happening, but I don't think that it was like a, I don't know. I don't think it's the, I mean, I guess only Lanny really knows, but I don't think it was the ultimatum that he makes it seem like.
Hey, Mahoney, I want to dance.
Let's go to the ship. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a bunch of bullshit, to be honest with you. And that's it. That's pretty much it for news. Not much more to... There wasn't much more I saw. So.
All right. Well, why don't we take a break?
Mm-hmm.
Come back. We'll do a little NFL Week 1.
Yes.
And then we'll have our special guest.
Because.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now.
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF?
I think you mean WWE there, Parv.
Yeah, whatever, but what about David Crockett?
He likes it!
Well, what about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get y'all until I get you, Paul Jones. Oh.
The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best!
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance. I'm Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunder Lips, I was winning world titles.
Well, there they are, our good friends Chad and Parr, Where the Big Boys Play. Now, if you want nonstop old school NWA discussion, getting back to that very first Starrcade, these guys have it covered. Even the PICs have made an appearance once. We are very particular what podcasts we visit. So check out our friends Chad and Parr, Where the Big Boys Play. Their link is right on our site, placetobenation.com. Just go into the podcast menu. And there they are, the other great shows we partner with. Chad and Parr, working Where the Big Boys Play. Speaking of Place to Be Nation, that's your everyday home for your pop culture needs. At placetobenation.com, we have everything. Wrestling, sports, comics, even polls. We want your opinions as well. Every day, there's something different with our top staff of writers who are experts in all fields of pop culture. From the weekly Raw review to the return of the hack, you've got everything you need. We're also working with a myriad of great podcasts, of course, besides Chad and Parr. We have Grapple Talk, the fans podcast, Off the Top Rope, Answering the 10 Count, We Found New Music, and the Kings of Sport with Nate Milton. We've got everything for your listening pleasure. So check us out every day of the week at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Now, don't forget about our good friend Graham Cawthon and the history of WWE.com. He's still the top source for all argument solvers, from match results to house show cards to pay-per-view histories. Any questions you need answered, any debates among wrestling fans that need ending, head over to Graham's treasure trove of information. You will certainly find it. Need to know what the opener of Starrcade 1995 was? What was the main event of that 1988 Boston Garden house show you went to when you were 11 years old? Graham can tell you. He has WWE, WCW, ECW results, and the growing results in TNA and Ring of Honor. So for all your wrestling research needs, check out Graham Cawthon at thehistoryofwwe.com. Now finally, if you want a place to just hang out, discuss all things wrestling with fellow diehard fans, check out the news and the great forums at twfnews.com. They have all the up-to-the-minute stories in WWE, TNA, and pretty much everywhere in between. They talk old school, Attitude Era, and even those hard-to-remember guys and shows like Waylon Mercy or In Your House Number 3. So check out all there is to see right on twfnews.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Christopher Daniels. I'm a national treasure, an idol to millions, and I've got the rear that makes the girls cheer. And you're listening to the Place to Be podcast. Please continue, because I'm great and so are you.
And we are back. Place to Be podcast, doing some headlines. Now, Scott, before we get to, before we take the field, let's quickly talk about PlaceToBeNation.com.
Always. Just
a couple things, because we talked a lot about it last night. There's one piece right now. If you guys, you know, you hear us, and maybe it's in one ear and out the other sometimes, but if there's one piece that you need to go read, it is Andrew Reich's Ode to Mid-South Wrestling. This thing is a tome on the history of Mid-South. Andrew grew up in that area down in Louisiana, was a big-time fan, helped shape him as a wrestling fan. And this coincides, of course, with the release of the Mid-South DVD by the WWE. Andrew did a great job. He's getting a lot of love around the internet. I mean, Dave Meltzer checked it out. Brian Alvarez. He's got a lot of love, a lot of publicity from this piece. So definitely go check it out. It won't be a waste of time at all by any means. It'll be well worth your time. Also, Scott, we continued our 2013 fall TV preview. You did Inside Sons of Anarchy. Pretty good preview there. That starts tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. Weber has
tonight.
Issues. I'm sorry, tonight, yes.
Tonight.
I'm all thrown off with this. I keep thinking it's Wednesday between going to play softball and doing this. I'm all fucked up.
No, it premieres tonight. Season 6. Good season coming up, hopefully.
Sons of Anarchy. So Weber has issues looking at Forever Evil number 1. Get a lot of love there for that, too, by Todd. Richard, the Mailman, episode 6, as we talked about. They talk about Breaking Bad, Red Zone, and friendship, among other things. Your Raw recap is up from last night. Check that, as always. And, of course, our Place to Be podcast, episode 251, Fully Loaded 2000. There to stream along with all of the other great podcasts.
where the big boys play. I was listening to that one today. They did WrestleWar 90, a very good show as well. Chad and Parv do a great job of that.
Mm-hmm.
Parv's on 8 million other shows too, and so's Chad and all those guys. Will and James and Charles. I can't keep them all straight, but they're all awesome. Titans of Wrestling, of course, Wrestling with the Past, all the great wrestling podcasts, Off the Top Rope, and then you've got Grapple Talk for the MMA fans. All kinds of great podcasts. If there's any place better than the place to be out there when it comes to wrestling and sports and pop culture podcasts, I dare you to find it and bring it to us, because I think we have the best collection of in-depth, niche, and general topic podcasts you will find anywhere on the internet.
I agree. I concur.
So just a little taste there, placetobenation.com. Check us out at Twitter, place2bnation, and on Facebook, /placetobenation. All right, Scott. Now what time is it?
It's time to take the field.
Right, and as we did last week, of course, we're not going to go in-depth and break down the games too much like we did last year. We're going to kind of move through these a lot quicker and more to the points, just due to time constraints that we have nowadays. We don't have the hours and hours to spend.
No, we don't. No. Too much advertising.
Yes. So, why don't you read the stats from last week with our prediction contests?
Okay. I was 13-3, and you were 12-4. So, for the first time in the history of the universe, I actually have a lead on you after a week. our locks were both right. You had the Patriots. They barely locked.
I know, right?
And I had the Dolphins, and that's snooze fest. They did beat Cleveland. We both had our upsets, and it was the same upset. The J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. Probably shouldn't have been if somebody knew how to fucking tackle on the sideline.
Hey.
And but the suicides were the difference. You jumped off a cliff with the Steelers.
Oh, that was ugly.
Yeah, that was not a pretty. There were not a lot of pretty. Last week was Sunday was Fuglyville.
Pittsburgh's going to have a very precipitous drop in the power rankings on Place to Be Nation on Thursday. Yes.
And I had the Chiefs. So I am at +3, and you are at +1.
Okay. All right, here we go. Thursday night, Scott. Your Jets march into New England, take on the Patriots. Now, it's a weird game, a lot of injuries. Looks like Gronkowski will not be back quite yet. Danny Amendola injured his groin, shockingly enough. I don't know if you can believe that. Kyle Frischetti cries somewhere. Zach Sudfeld, Gronk's replacement, injured. On the Jets side, Jeremy Curley is going to miss the game with a concussion. So a lot of the offensive weapons missing.
And the running back for the Pats.
Yes, so. Vereen, out 8 Vereen. Weeks. So, I think the offensive losses hurt the Pats more, because now they're relying on Edelman and a bunch of rookies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's ever a chance the Jets have to maybe steal this game, this is it. They have a young, ferocious pass rush that we saw last week. You hit Brady a couple times, you know, he gets rattled. They're dinged up out in the field. You put Cromartie at Edelman. Who else they got? If Geno Smith can play smart and then get the run game going just a little bit, I think they can steal this game. However, I'm going to take the Patriots, because until they lose, I don't pick against them. I just think there's more of a glimmer of hope that the Jets could win this game than there was a week and a half ago.
Mm-hmm. Because the quarterback, it could have Brady on the back or Cena on the back. It seems like the premise is always the same.
And Geno, I will say this, it was nice to see a quarterback actually kind of know what the hell he was doing out there, throwing the ball away when he needed to. He only had 4 passes that were off target as opposed to like 35 from Sanchez over the last few years. So that was nice to see with him, you know, really doing a great job, just taking care of the ball, not overthrowing guys 6 feet over their heads, not whipping it into the ground. Really only had a couple dumb plays. That interception was really bad. But other than that, and the taking that bad sack that knocked him back out of field goal range midway through the game. Other than that, he seemed to play very well. And I like the offensive coordinator this year. I like Marty Mornhinweg. So I think he does a good job. The Paul Heyman of offensive coordinators, as I call him, does a good job hiding weakness and promoting strength. So that's all I'll say about the Jets. But I'll take New England. But I think I'm not feeling awful about the game. So I'll say that.
Oh, you shouldn't. I thought Geno Smith looked pretty good. I thought he looked very confident. Stayed within himself. Didn't get too crazy. But I'm going to take the Patriots too. Brady's Brady. He can throw the ball to anybody and most catch it. But he does have to be careful. He doesn't have as many weapons as he normally does. I think it'll be a low-scoring game, and I think the Patriots hold on. Be a tough loss for you, but don't hang your head on it. I think it'll be a close game. I don't think it'll be a blowout.
Well, I really wish Buffalo could have pulled off that upset, because even if the Jets would have lost, then it would look a lot better, you know, they'd both be 1-1, you know, instead of the Pats going to 2-0. But whatever. Right? It's very similar to last year where the Jets really had a chance in that game that they kind of blew to kind of turn the division upside down. They would have won it the first play. I mean, this is a good chance for them to really kind of put a blemish on the Pats and go 2-0. And they got a couple of winnable games coming up, too, over the next couple of weeks, so before they hit that stretch of death. So if they could steal this game, what could be winnable for them and a chance to pick up a major win, after this they get Buffalo at home and then Tennessee. So, I mean, you know, Scott, you know, they might not be in bad shape if they can win this game, really.
No, they couldn't be in bad shape. I don't think. I agree.
All right.
I think it'll be tough, though. It'll still be tough. Oh,
of course.
But,
yeah.
But
unlikely,
but you never know.
It would be. I'm not trying to get my hopes up, but I really think if they can get this win, they could set themselves up pretty nicely. Because even when they hit that crazy stretch, even if they lose all those games, they'd still be like 4-4 coming out of that. You know what I mean? Which would be crazy. Mm-hmm. So
right.
And then they have a soft end of the schedule. But okay, yeah. I'm getting too excited now. St. Louis goes to Atlanta. Atlanta looking for revenge. They need to bounce back after the loss to New Orleans. I like Atlanta here at home. St. Louis was kind of shaky in their win against Arizona. I don't see Atlanta dropping this game.
I don't either. Home opener, Georgia Dome will be rocking. They can get that win against the Saints back later in the year. It's time to kind of pick up some wins and start racking up the Ws, and I like them in the home opener here as well.
Okay. Carolina travels up to Buffalo. Buffalo has to shake off that tough loss, and they come with their second straight home game. Carolina gave Seattle a pretty good game. Didn't get much of the offense going, but the defense bent and did not break until the very end. I'll take Carolina here. I think these two teams are about even, honestly, and I'll just go with the more experienced Newton over E.J. Manuel.
Who's favored? Who's
Carolina
favored
on the road?
Believe it or not, I'm going to make this my upset pick. I like the Bills here. I think they play with a lot of guts. Doug Marrone made some silly coaching mistakes in that fourth quarter against the Pats. He didn't milk. He gave Patriots way too much time. I think he learns from that. The crowd was into it. Defense played very well. They were kind of jumping all over the field, better than I thought. Manuel has a pretty good arm. He's got good receivers. Carolina, 7 points is not impressive. Although, I mean, they were facing probably the best defense.
Yeah, I was just, I mean, that's...
yeah. So, but I still think Buffalo. If this game was in Carolina, I take the Pats. If this was in Carolina, I take the Panthers. But I like Buffalo here. I think the home field. I think they'll get motivated in that game. I think they feel good about themselves even after losing on Sunday. So my upset special, I like the Bills at home over Carolina.
I think it's going to be a tough game for Spiller. I mean, we looked at, you know, Marshawn Lynch did nothing against that Carolina run D, so it'll be interesting. Spiller could be the key. All right, Minnesota travels to Chicago. Chicago with a very impressive win against the Bengals at home now. Minnesota coming off a tough loss to Detroit that was a little bit closer than I think the score is closer than the game was. I think Detroit really owned that game. I don't like Minnesota at all. I think it's been the Adrian Peterson show. And obviously, even outside of that big touchdown run, he didn't even have a great game. I mean, he had the three touchdowns, but the two of them were in close. Christian Ponder, I think, is terrible. They need to find a legit quarterback. They're going to waste Peterson's prime without a legit quarterback behind center there. So I like Chicago here.
I like Chicago as well. Back-to-back home games for them. Yeah, Christian Ponder's a stiff. He's not very good at all. And you're right. I mean, AP, he could have an unbelievable year, score 25 touchdowns, and they could be, you know, 6-10.
I think they fucked up not going after Vic in the offseason. I really do. I think Vic could have really brought a little bit of a dynamic feel to that team. He could have brought some playmaking ability, a guy that can throw the ball and run and just make big plays. And I think Vic with Jennings and Patterson and who's the other guy? He had a big game. I'm drawing a blank now. He had a big game this week. Simpson. I think he could have really played well with them. And
Jerome Simpson, yes.
I just think, Ponder's not the answer.
No, he's a bum. I like the Bears at home as well.
Okay. Washington coming off a drumming at the hands of Philadelphia. And this one pisses me off, Scott, because it was so obvious. And we both sat there and picked Washington like idiots. We should have known that the first team to have to deal with that offense was going to be in trouble. And Griffin coming off the start. It was all there. It was one of those ones that really chapped my ass I didn't see coming because all the signs were there. Griffin off the surgery, hadn't played all preseason. You had a feel he was going to be somewhat sloppy. And then Philly with this all-new offense, you had a feel the first defense would struggle. Pisses me off. But I think Green Bay wins here. I think they need to bounce back, get a win. They played really well in San Francisco. I mean, that game was super close and a great game to watch. I think they come home and take care of business against the Skins.
I like the Packers as well. You know, the reason I didn't see it coming was because I thought it was the opposite. I really thought the Eagles were going to struggle in this offense. And I was clearly wrong. We'll talk about them in a little bit. I think Griffin, I think there's more to this knee thing than meets the eye. I think Shanahan is...
I don't think he was ready. I don't think he should have played.
No, I think there's a lot of smoke screens in D.C. right now over that. I like the Packers. They didn't play badly against the
Niners.
No,
they played great. I mean, they went into the Niners. They went into San Fran and hung 30-something points on that defense and went toe-to-toe with them. So,
no shame
in that loss.
Yeah. No, I like the Packers at home, too.
All right. Here is one of my upsets of the week, and that is Miami traveling to Indianapolis. Now, I wasn't terribly impressed with Miami beating Cleveland. It was kind of just a TCB ho-hum game.
Mm-hmm.
Indy... I wanted to see more out of them against Oakland. I mean, Oakland had a legit chance to steal that game. Indy did not look good, did not look sharp. I think Miami's D puts the pressure on Luck, and I think they squeeze out a low-scoring game.
I like the Colts here. If this game was in Miami, I'd say maybe the crowd kind of pushes the Dolphins to victory. I think Andrew Luck will rebound, play better. And I think they beat the Dolphins. I wouldn't be surprised if the Dolphins win this game, but I don't think they do. I like the Colts at home.
All right, your Cowboys travel to Kansas City. Kansas City laid the shit smack down on Jacksonville. They just beat the piss out of them and Blaine Gabbert. Not even close. Dallas, I don't know what to think of your Cowboys, Scott. I mean, that was a game.
I don't either.
They should have won 41-7 that game. You know what I mean? That was to be that close is embarrassing, honestly. I like Kansas City at home here. I mean, I don't know. I didn't like how Dallas looked. I don't know how Romo was going to be feeling. Kansas City's D put a lot of pressure on Gabbert, and if they start banging Romo around, you could be in for a little bit of a long afternoon there.
Okay. Here are the problems. Here are the positives. The three quick positives of the Cowboys. The offensive line, Dallas's offensive line played much better than I think you may have realized. They had one issue with.
I watched the whole game. I know they played well.
They played well, so I don't think the Chiefs will give them as much of a problem protecting Romo or getting at Romo as you think. I think he'll be fine in that aspect. What hurt the Cowboys is even though they dominated time of possession, Romo is pretty much in charge of the passing game right now. Bill Callahan's nothing more than a traffic cop. Romo's problem on Sunday was he likes these quick outs, like snap, throw, snap, throw, snap, throw. He tries to get it to Dez. He does it a lot. He did it a lot to Williams. Williams, I think that's what it is. I think that's his name. Yeah. And the problem is that pass works when it's like first and 10 and you need an infinite number of yards. When you need a finite number of yards, like third and 4, it doesn't work. Giants were pinching and they would get 2 yards and have to punt. So a lot of drives on Sunday ended much too early. Because he wasn't letting these receivers run through progressions and get first down yardage.
I think at the end of the day, they just didn't step on the throat. And this is a game they should have put away easily with all the time. I mean, the Giants, they wanted them to just hand that game away.
Yeah.
And the Cowboys never pulled away. And that shit like that worries me. You know, I know the Giants are a good team, but when you have a chance like that to really go for the throat and bury a team and you let them hang around like that and be within, down the stretch, the last 2 minutes, the Giants had a chance to win that game till that last pick. I don't know. I think Kansas City's playing very confidently. Maybe I'm buying into the hype too much with Kansas City and maybe Dallas goes in there and runs all over them. But this to me is always that weird, tricky game with Dallas. Remember, who was it last year when you were here, we were watching and they won?
Yeah, I remember the game you're talking about.
Remember, we watched it, and we were like, why aren't they destroying this team right now?
Yeah, it wasn't the Niners. That was 2 years ago.
No, yeah, the Niners, we watched. I remember watching that.
That was the day and night of champions. I don't remember.
I'll look it up.
They played Kansas City like 3 years ago, and that was the game where they had to go to overtime. And this is a worse Chiefs team, and Romo hit Austin with that long bomb. They're going to win this game.
Actually, I guess it might have been the Seattle game, I think. And
they played. That's right, they played awful.
Yeah.
And they ended up losing.
Well, we didn't know Seattle was good at that point.
Yeah. They ended up losing.
Yeah.
I think, I'm not saying you're over. You have a right to think Kansas City played great, but they're playing a better team this week.
Oh, no. They definitely are. I don't think, they're not going to beat them 26-2. But I do think, I don't know. I just don't have a lot of faith in the Cowboys after that win.
All right. Well, I think knowing that after this, they have they're back home against the Rams, and then they go to San Diego, they got a good shot to go 4-0 these first four games.
Yeah.
I think Garrett's going to really focus. come up, you know, I think the defense played very well, except in the end, they kind of gave away.
Oh, is it really focus? Is that something different?
Well, no, but I'm just saying, I think they're going to tweak the offense a little bit. I think they're going to tell Romo, let these receivers run their progressions, get first downs, stop doing these quick shots. It's not going to work on third and five. Those work on first and ten.
I'm just getting sick of getting burnt by your Cowboys, so I'm sorry.
I think they win. I think they win and they go to 2-0. But it'll be close. It'll be a good game. I think Alex Smith is a good quarterback, but Romo's no Blaine Gabbert. Sorry. And this offensive line is not the Jaguars. So,
all right, battle of two teams that played on Monday night this week, and that is Philadelphia at home for San Diego. San Diego showed me a little bit of something, Scott. I thought they were going to be one of the worst teams in the league, and they may still very well be, but they really gave Houston a game, kind of choked it away late with a pick at the end there and set up the field goal for the game winner for Houston. I like Philly here as well. I think they stay hot. I think they're coming off that win at home, first home game. San Diego coming cross-country, 1 o'clock start. I don't think they're that good. I think there was a little bit of a mirage that kind of caught Houston off guard with that late start. But I do like the Eagles here.
This is my lock for the week. I think the Eagles have a lot of confidence. I think Chip Kelly has a lot of confidence. I think they're going to go home opener. I think the crowd's going to get excited. And I like. I think they're going to beat the Chargers. Okay. So that's my lock this week. The Eagles at home.
And here is my lock: the Ravens at home for Cleveland. I think the Ravens need a win desperately. They want to win, and coming off that Denver loss, a humiliating loss, I think they're going to bounce back and stomp Cleveland. I think they win this one handily.
This is my suicide pick. I like the Ravens at home. Also, I think they're angry. They're pissed off. And if John Harbaugh has any kind of something, he's going to get these guys fired up. Somebody has to take the Ray Lewis mantle, and you clearly saw last Thursday there was nobody taking the Ray Lewis mantle. Somebody on this defense has to be the mouthpiece now, and hopefully this week, since last Thursday, John Harbaugh found one and goes out there and punches the Browns in the face. So I like Baltimore.
All right, Houston home for Tennessee. I think Tennessee really, kind of like San Diego, surprised me with how well they played in beating Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's a fucking mess right now, but Tennessee, that was an impressive win for Tennessee. Their defense really played well for a team that was awful last year, but I still like Houston at home. I just think they're too strong for Tennessee.
I agree. I think Houston kind of got a wake-up call after what happened on Monday night, and I think they win this game at home.
Yep. All right, Detroit to Arizona. Arizona played well, and it's amazing what a quarterback can do for a team for the first time. I mean, Palmer looked competent. They still didn't win, but Detroit secretly had maybe one of the best, you know, games of anyone outside of Denver in week one. They really pretty much handled Minnesota. They went up and down the field. Stafford looked very sharp. Reggie Bush looked great. Calvin played well. He had two touchdowns overturned. I like Detroit to go in there and go to 2-0.
Yes, I agree. I like the Lions in this game as well. Feely played good for a lot of yards. I don't think he'll do that against the Lions. I think Stafford and the Lions offense, although this Sue situation is not good.
Yeah, another fine.
He's a piece of crap. obviously, there's still a discipline problem in Detroit. I don't know how they'll fix that, but they do win this game. I like the Lions.
All right. New Orleans on the road after a big win at home over Atlanta, traveling to Tampa Bay. Tampa, sloppy, poppy. Very similar to our friends in Detroit. Just an ugly first quarter against the Jets. It just looked like a fucking clown show out there. I like New Orleans. I think they stay
hot. Dirty.
Yeah, they are dirty. They're a weird team. I'd like to say they come home and kind of settle down and win, but I like New Orleans to stay hot. And they're playing with confidence and a lot of anger right now, and I think they'll throw a little bit on Tampa.
Yeah, I think New Orleans, I would have used this as a lock, but I think I want to, or suicide, but I think I'll save them. But they're going to come in here and they're going to win big.
One caveat, though, is that Tampa recently, over the last couple of years, has kind of been New Orleans' bugaboo. Like they've played them pretty well, even when they weren't great. They have struggled. And now you add Revis and Goldson into the mix out there. So they're not going to be able to throw all over them like last year. So it might be a little bit closer and a little bit low scoring, but I like New Orleans.
I like them too. I'm not a big Greg Schiano fan. I don't think he's a very good coach. I think he should have stayed in college. He really didn't do anything in college, so I don't know why the Bucks thought he was a worthy NFL coach. I just don't think he is. Shows no discipline. I think he promotes the cheap shots and the dirty play, and that's not a good environment for an NFL team. I like the Saints.
All right, here is my probably a cheap one, but I'm going to go with it. My upset of the week, and that is the Jaguars winning in Oakland. Now, I think Jacksonville looked awful. They're my worst team in the league. I think Oakland played a little bit over the head. I thought Terrell Pryor looked pretty good. But now Henny is in for Jacksonville. Gabbert's out. I think that offense stabilizes a little bit. I think they kind of go in there and get the win. And whereas everyone may think Oakland's going because they looked better week one, I could see Jacksonville going in there and stealing a low-scoring game.
No, I disagree. I think Oakland. I think Oakland wins this game at home. I think it'll be low scoring and very ugly. The fuggliness continues in the NFL in week two, and I think this game's one of them. I like the Raiders in a low scoring game.
All right. Big game here for the Giants at home after a big loss on Sunday night, with Denver coming in. Denver looked like a juggernaut. I don't think Manning throws for 7 touchdowns again, but I do think Denver wins this game.
I was reading a few things today and listening to some. I was listening to some analysts on Mad Dog Radio and some other NFL radio on Sirius XM today. I think a lot of people were pleased that the Bronco offense Thursday looked good, but remember they were trailing at the half. And to be honest with you, before Michael Orr got hurt, the Bronco defense wasn't doing much to Joe Flacco. He had hours to throw.
It really turned on that halfway through there. I mean, they weren't killing them. But.
They weren't killing them. Denver wins this game because the Giant running game is a debacle, and Brandon Jacobs isn't just going to show up and rush for 200 yards.
No.
But this game will be closer than people think. I know a lot of Giant fans, Dr. G included, are already kicking dirt in their face and going to go winless or whatever. But the Giants are going to show up. They're a proud team. Eli. He's going to want to show up his brother. And Peyton's going to want to show up his brother. So I think you'll see a fun stat crazy game. If you have these quarterbacks in your fantasy teams, not that we're promoting that, but if you do, you're probably in for some, you know, some fun. But I think the Broncos win. I think it'll be high scoring. I think both defenses get shredded, but Peyton will have the last word and win the game.
All right, big game Sunday night. Seattle home for San Francisco. San Fran just looked way better than Seattle week one. I think it would be easy to take them, but I'm going to stand by my prediction of Seattle being, you know, going to win the division this year. I think this is their first step to it. I think they bounce back. They're always much tougher at home. These two teams played to a stalemate pretty much last year. I think Seattle wins a very, very close game.
Okay. I'm going, hey, look, I didn't put San Francisco in the playoffs, and that's because they're going to lose games like this. That place is going to be a zoo on Sunday night. They're going to welcome their Seahawks for the home opener with open arms. And as good as Kaepernick looked on Sunday, is I think he'll struggle a little bit on here. He's going to face a much more energetic secondary than he did against the Packers. Packers secondary is good, but not great. When you face a ball hawk and D like the Seahawks, very difficult to throw deep coverage like that. I like the Seahawks in this game. It'll be close, but I think a big pick in the fourth quarter seals it for Seattle.
Yeah, Seattle's offense has to get going. But.
Yes, they do. Russell Wilson's got to snap out of it.
All right, Monday night what looked to be a big game a while ago. Now looks like kind of a joke. That's Cincy at home for Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is hurting. They're down to just Isaac Redman running the ball, and Pouncey has gone in the center, and they just spend Larry Foote's gone on defense. They just riddled with injuries right now. My Pittsburgh AFC North champion prediction not looking good. They fell apart very quickly. I like Cincy here to bounce back after a tough loss. I think AJ Green has another 700-yard game or whatever the fuck he had on this past week. But.
Yes. Obviously, Mr. Forchetti and I were big on the Bengal bandwagon, and I like them to win here in the home opener. They played good. They in the loss on the road in Chicago.
Yeah, but you know what? That if you want to, those are the games you got to win if you want to be a big boy team.
I agree.
The Bengals want to be a big boy team. Win that game. You're up.
I agree.
Even if you're on the road, you're up. Chicago's no better than you. Win that game, and they didn't get it done.
Nope. They'll have a game. Who do they play next week? Oh, they're home next. Well, you know what? They got a big boy game next week because they're home to the Packers. So that's they are home, but it is still the Packers. So
right. Well, they're lucky Pittsburgh's just banged up because they could have maybe been looking at 0-3.
Yeah, exactly.
Disastrous, but.
I don't know when their next big road game is. The week after they're on the road to Cleveland. But anyway, I think Cincinnati wins this game. But yeah, their next big boy game is next week when they host Green Bay. Okay. Yeah, poor Ben. Ben's got to be like, God, another season where I'm going to be limping.
Well, look,
and
I don't ever feel bad for Ben Roethlisberger, but
well, no, he doesn't have two rings. Sure.
So, all right, there are your predictions. So my upset is Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
My lock is who did I say?
Baltimore.
And my suicide will
be. Yeah, I don't think you picked the suicide.
I'll take Cincinnati because I probably won't take them again.
Okay. All right. My upset. My lock is Philadelphia. My upset is Buffalo, and my suicide is Baltimore.
All right, Scott, there are your NFL Week 2 predictions, week one review.
So now, why don't we wrap things up by bringing in our very special guest. And that guest is on the line with us now, Scott. PlaceToBeNation.com's very own. The one and only, the great Steve Willey. Steve, welcome back.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me again.
Of course.
Not used to having silence and not having the $25,000 pyramid theme in the background.
All right. I almost feel like I should have played it. For old time's sake. Of course, you made it to the Final Four in this year's tournament. Very good showing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wild ride you were on.
It was. It very much was.
Yeah. So, all right. Let's talk about let's work backwards maybe this time around. Let's talk about PlaceToBeNation.com, what you've been doing, your thoughts on the site. Of course, you signed up as a main event writer, recapper, kind of got your feet wet, and now you're pretty much on here as a full-timer. You're going to be part of the five count coming up. You had a little,
just sent that great piece
on Darren Young. Go ahead.
Yeah, just sent that off to Ben. Looking forward to seeing everyone's choices this week as we get into Night of Champions. And yeah, but Darren Young, it was kind of an interesting thing. I was a little nervous about putting the article out there. You know, wrestling and not exactly the most, welcoming of industries to get into. And, you know, friends on Facebook, you know, not sure how they're going to react at all. And I was surprised by the wider range of people who actually read it and went to the site. And very excited about that.
What are your thoughts about, did you get to read Andrew Reich's piece today?
Yeah, I was reading it right before we started talking, and in the ancient history, stuff that I have never seen before, and starting to read it today actually got me to order the Blu-ray. So, you know, Andrew and I have known each other for a few years now. We actually spoke quite a bit the night that my second son was born while I was in the hospital, and kind of bonded ever since then.
Yeah, Andrew's a great guy. And again, definitely want to pimp that that piece for him out there, the Ode to Mid-South Wrestling. So, Steve, tell us a little bit about you. Fan of Chicago teams, but you don't live in Chicago. But kind of tell us about growing up and how you became a wrestling fan and the teams you root for.
Sure. I was actually born and raised outside of Chicago, so that's why I've kind of always gone towards those teams. I think I was actually thinking about this today, that I became a wrestling fan probably around 84, 37 years old. So I was about 8 at the time, and first memories of wrestling were getting a TV from my grandmother, and back in Chicago we had all the UHF stations where we'd get World Class, NWA, a lot of the syndicated WWE stuff. We didn't have cable back then, so you know, watch Superstars, Wrestling Challenge, and my first WWF memory would be the recap of the Cyndi Lauper, Roddy Piper, when he smashed the gold record on, I think it was David Wolf was his name, Cyndi Lauper's manager.
It was actually Captain Lou hit.
He hit Captain Lou, but David Wolf was in the ring with that bad...
Yes, David Wolf was the manager.
Bad, bold mullet that he had going on.
Oh, it was terrible. It was terrible.
So that in World Class, too. So World Class, remembering coming in at the time with the Freebirds versus the Von Erich feud. And just really gravitating towards guys like the Von Erichs, especially Kevin, like the high-flying, graceful of the three brothers, or the five brothers, the only one who really is still living.
Kevin, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. What were your favorite, what were some of your favorite guys? I mean, obviously, it seemed like you had a wide spectrum of viewing, so you had a cornucopia of different kinds of wrestlers. Who were some of your single favorites?
I always gravitated towards the, and I still do now, towards the kind of plucky baby face, the high flying guys, like a Kevin Von Erich. I remember the Simpsons in World Class Championship Wrestling, in NWA, more like the Rock and Roll Express. But more of those type guys, the smaller kind of high flyers. So when you started seeing that come in more in the mid-90s, you know, later in the Attitude Era, seeing the guys coming over from Michinoku Pro, that was, you know, the Mexicans come up to WCW, that was really an exciting time in wrestling for me.
Kind of take us through your evolution as a fan then. So you started watching on the UHF stuff, and was there a time you kind of fell out of it, or have you been pretty much locked in from when you became a fan? And other favorites just kind of as you moved along. I know you like some of the lightweights and stuff, like you said, but any kind of, you know, legit guys that you've really, say, basically your Desert Island guys, if there were guys you had to bring their tapes or DVDs with you.
Oh, sure.
Throughout the years.
Yeah, I was always a fan. I've always been a fan growing up, and I didn't really know anybody as a kid who liked wrestling. So I was kind of, you know, like a pariah in that way. My dad took me to a couple house shows. He worked very, very close, like one block away from the Rosemont Horizon. So even though he had no interest, he took me to a couple house shows in the 80s, including, you know, Jordan would be happy to know, the one where Ultimate Warrior defeated Andre the Giant in 30 seconds. And
bullshit.
it's on the history of WWE. And the Rockers, we talked about this on the flight. The Rougeaus and the Rockers in an Iron Man match.
Yes.
And I remember my dad being so upset with that 30-second match because that was the scheduled main event and feeling like he had just been ripped off, only to see the, you know, a match go 65 minutes later on. So, yeah, the Rockers were another big favorite of mine growing up, too, because of, you know, Shawn Michaels, obviously. As I got to high school, I kind of fell out a little bit. Made it a little harder to follow some, you know, to write the five count article this week, trying to remember back to that time period. And when I really started getting involved again was in the late 90s, where I met some of my best friends in college, met a couple guys who were into wrestling. A friend of mine, Jamie, who I ran track with at Marquette, where I went to school, was into wrestling, and we went to King of the Ring 96 together. And we pretty much had a streak of watching all the pay-per-views for about 4 or 5 years after that. And that was really when my wrestling fandom kicked into high gear, because now I had other guys to share it with. You know, just like a lot of people getting together on Monday nights to watch Raw. ECW was starting to come out to Chicago and Milwaukee at that time period. So really hopping on the bandwagon with that.
Now, you mentioned you went to Marquette. Let's take a quick sidetrack here. Thoughts on the new Big East kicking off in a month or so?
You know, sad to see some of the big names go. You know, I went to school when they were in the Great Midwest Conference, which was a joke of a conference. Marquette basketball was just like watching paint dry. It's kind of like watching Wisconsin now. Teams that go into the 40s, and that's about it. So I'm excited to get a little bit more of a – I don't like these big conferences with 16 teams. Mm-hmm. I want to see more of the rivalries take up. I'm excited now. I really catch on to teams who my friends like. So, you know, I'm sure I'm going to be starting to follow Providence and – get excited when I see other teams win too, since I'm used to a bunch of losers that I root for.
It's fun because, like you said, it's cool to just really have that basketball centric. I love how it's going to be the double round robin this year with just 10 teams, so you see every team twice, home and away.
Yep.
I think that really adds to the rivalries too. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think there's a lot of quality basketball schools in there, all kind of on the same level. So I think it'll be good. I mean, I think Scott's Hoya is a really kind of the lead team as far as recognition goes, but sure, we'll see if they end up being the best team this year. But I'm down with that. I was for it. And the only time it really kind of hit me was when I looked at the schedule that just came out, and, you know, seeing, you know, Creighton on there twice, and you know, some of these other teams, and not
but
seeing
no UConn,
yeah, not UConn, right, or Syracuse or Pitt coming in. I mean, that kind of hit me. But on the flip side, I'm for it, because I feel like if these schools didn't act now, it would have been too late, and they would have been left out in the dark anyway.
Right, and they don't have the football to back it up. Most of the schools don't at all. So this is going to be a huge revenue, I think, for them too, getting this big contract with Fox, and, you know, being on television all the time. And some of the smaller schools, you know, not like Marquette's a big school, not that Providence is really a big school, but, you know, some of the, you know, your Creighton's and that, getting more national coverage instead of just being the mid-major underdog, as it were, you know, getting that coverage once a week, you know, once a couple months on ESPN, and then in the tournament, no one knows about them at all.
And I mean, every game is on Fox or Fox Sports or some kind of Fox region, you know, every game is covered pretty much on TV with them. So this deal not only financially really helped out these schools, but also TV wise. So looking forward to that. Mr. Willie, I might have to have you maybe do a companion piece. I'm going to be doing my first one's going to be coming out in a couple weeks here. A piece I'm going to report live from the PC games and kind of keep updates on the as the season goes along. Maybe you could do a little Marquette one to be a companion to that.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I want to hear about this Cooley World Order, too, at some point.
Yes, the cool. I'll do a whole article. I'm going to try and actually track those guys down on Twitter and do an interview with them, because they're pretty interesting guys. They started this whole grassroots movement and really just kind of exploded last year. So as we get closer to the season, I'm going to hit them up and try and do a little piece on them.
Very cool.
We can all learn about it.
Definitely. Yes.
All right, so back to the wrestling stuff. Let's do a little roundtable, or not roundtable, rather, kind of lightning round like we've been doing with some of our guests lately. What's your favorite pay-per-view of all time?
Oh, God. People are going to hate me after saying this kind of stuff. One of my favorites, and I wouldn't even call it a pay-per-view, my favorite wrestling event of all time was Ring of Honor Best in the World 2006. Kevin Kelly's probably doing a little dance right now. You know, you talked before about falling out of wrestling. Once I moved out of Milwaukee and moved, you know, started having life and getting married and all that, I really stopped watching wrestling. My wife was, bless her heart, was into it for a couple of years merely for me, I think. I think she was trying to woo me in some way. So she would actually go to ECW shows and whatnot. But, you know, once we were married and everything, you know, I was just like... It fades real quick. Yeah. And so I didn't really have anybody. Again, my friends were 100 miles away, so we would get together, go to the Ring of Honor shows, and that became kind of our more of a tradition. And we were at Best in the World, which was the first time you had guys coming in from Japan, the Dragon Gate guys, these under 200-pound super high flyers, things I've never seen before, Lance Storm coming out of retirement, you know, the heyday of Bryan Danielson in the indies, and it was just a real – Samoa Joe and Christopher Daniels, all the guys that are just huge megastars now. It was just really cool to see and be there in such a small, you know, 1,000-people setting. That's probably my all-time favorite wrestling event just because of the memories of that. And Hornswoggle was even in the crowd before he was Hornswoggle. He was dating a friend of my – one of my friends.
That's funny.
Interesting.
Favorite all-time wrestler?
Well, it used to be Benoit. That kind of really, I still can respect him for his wrestling. That's kind of I can't really watch his stuff that much anymore. So I would probably say Chris Jericho overall, just for his breadth of. He's been around for years now. You know, mm-hmm. really since like '93. When he came up and still going strong today, and never fails to get me excited when he comes back.
Which of his runs do you think's been the best?
I still love his WCW Cruiserweight run where he was the whiny heel, that the Battle Royal, where he was the announcer and Dean Malenko got one over him, is just one of my favorites. I was at the show in Chicago. I was at my birthday, my 22nd birthday, when he did the 1,004 moves. With the reversed Elvis thrust kick and arm bar, and remembering how he did that all through the commercial break, all through live, had the dot matrix printer print out. I love that. And really the time period that you're going through right now in some of the vintage vaults as he's really starting to pick up in his WWE run. You know, he had that initial pop when he came back in, and then this documented in his books and on the Vintage Vaults too, it kind of started to peter out for a while. But as you know, he got the Phantom win over Triple H with the dusty finish, of course. And that I remember, you know, that was when I was by myself and just marking out, jumping up and down like an idiot. No one really to call or anything like that, but still marking out. Just love that time period.
Favorite WrestleMania?
I was afraid you were going to ask me that. Nostalgia says 4, and I know that's not a popular one, but I think that was the first one I really saw in the moment, not off of like a VHS months later. I had a friend tape it for me and saw it really quick, and I was a big Macho Man fan, more so than Hogan. Broke my heart when he turned on Hogan. It became a bad guy, on the main event. But I just love the tournaments, very much like you guys love tournaments. And it was such an original show for that time period. It's hard to watch going back now because it just doesn't, some of it doesn't, the 4-minute matches, 5-minute matches. Doesn't hold up as much anymore, but back then, that was the coolest thing ever.
All right, last one. If you can make a dream match, any two guys in their primes, who are you putting on?
Gosh, that's a hard one. Bret and Jericho. You know, it didn't really happen that I can remember, and definitely not in their primes. You know, having the background in Canada together, Bret always one of my favorites, kind of one of those technical guys, and Jericho obviously my all-time favorite. You know, Bret as the face and Jericho as the kind of whiny heel, I think would be fun.
All right, Willie, before we let you go, we got some big news that you broke this past week. You'll be joining us in Pittsburgh for the Rumble.
Yes, yes, I am, and I just found out from my friend yesterday he's going to be joining us at least part of the time.
Awesome.
Excited, planning on going to Ring of Honor, going to the Rumble, and you know, speaking of college basketball, Pitt and Duke are playing the day after the Royal Rumble in Pittsburgh, so thinking about getting tickets for that as well.
Very nice.
Yeah, awesome.
It'll be a lot of fun. We have a pretty sizable group going now, so we'll have to make sure we get to start planning how we're going to do the Ring of Honor thing, and then definitely we'll have to go out before and after that show. Flanagan and I will be in town, and Roger will be in town pretty early Saturday in Pittsburgh. We're getting in like 10:30, so we're going to have the whole day to fill, checking out the city and stuff. So, and then we'll figure out something before the show on Sunday, too.
And hopefully Kevin Kelly being around, as I heard on the podcast a couple days ago.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, we'll be in. Hopefully, get early enough. We'll hang out with him too. So should be a lot of fun. So I'm so happy. That made my day when you said you were coming, because I've been waiting to see what the verdict was going to be. So I'm excited to get to hang out.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that Kevin Kelly doesn't kiss me like Jimmy Jacobs did while I was waiting for him. God. We'll never live that down.
We have to set that up for you. Quickly, what are your thoughts on my boy Alfonso Soriano? Two big home runs tonight?
Again? Wow. Yeah. Where was this with the Cubs?
Well, I got the numbers for you right here. With the Cubs, he had 17 home runs and 51 RBIs in 93 games. In 43 games with the Yankees, 15 home runs and 47 RBI.
And he wasn't even playing that bad with the Cubs this year.
No,
You know, he obviously had no one around him in the lineup, but you know, when he first came over, he wasn't even doing this well. Rejuvenation. I'm glad he's making you happy.
He makes
and
me
I'm glad
very
he's happy.
And you make me happy too, Steve Willie.
Well, thank you. You guys make me happy as well.
So what's your favorite wrestling website? Or what's your favorite pop culture website?
Well, my favorite pop culture website is definitely placetobenation.com.
Attaboy. And of course,
and who's your favorite hockey team?
The Blackhawks, of course.
All right, you're done. Goodbye.
All right. Steve Willie, you can find him each and every week here right on PlaceToBeNation.com. He writes about main event as his main duty, but you will see him popping up left and right in other pieces as well. So friend him, like him, follow him on Twitter. Mr. Willie, what's that handle?
SteveWillie34, at SteveWillie34. I've been on for a whole 3 weeks now. I have 19 followers.
This guy needs more followers. Follow him.
My goal is to have 1% of Ben Morse's followers by the end of the year.
These are all dummy accounts, though. No doubt about
that. I'm guessing
that
the 34 is Walter Payton.
Yes.
All right, good job, Sherlock. All right, let's go ahead and wrap up, Scott. It's been a fun week. We're going to let Mr. Willie be involved in the close here. How about that? So we'll be back next week. We have SummerSlam 2000 Monday, and then a little special secret treat for you guys on Wednesday, which maybe we'll reveal. Maybe not. Maybe just surprise you with it. But that's about it. Hope you guys had a great week listening to the podcast. Always check out PlaceToBeNation.com. Tons of good stuff. And like we said, please check out that Mid-South Wrestling piece by Andrew Reich. It is very well done. It's very interesting and a nice little lesson in history. So for Steve Willie, for Scott Grisco, I'm Joe from Zero. Place of the Nation. Have a great week, great weekend. I'll talk to you Monday night. Some
you guys, what are you guys reviewing Fully Loaded 2000, by the way?
Eventually we'll get to it. I think we're going to have 17 more interviews with Kevin Kelly first.
All right. Please respond.
All right. Here, Steve, take the first one. You can try not to stay high. Bounce to stay low, you want God, but you can't inflate your ego. You're already there, then there's nowhere to go. Your cup's already full, then it's bound to overflow. If you're drowning in the waters and you can't stay afloat, ask Hashem for mercy. He'll throw you a rope, you're looking for help from God. Yeah, you couldn't leave down, searching up to the sky, looking beneath the ground. Like a king without his crown, you'll keep falling down. And really wants to leave, but can I get rid of your crown? You're trying to reach onto the heights and run down, bound on the ground. Giving up your pride, then you earn a sound.
making room for his love, then a fire gun blaze. Make room for his love, then a fire gun blaze. What's this silly man of who with a hole in a ceiling? I give myself to you from the essence of my beginning. I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a beating. What's this silly man of who with a hole in a ceiling? I give myself to you from the essence of my beginning. I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now.